by Republican National Committee pin and never say those horrid things again, at least until next year. Mike Lane, thanks for coming here on the special Halloween show. I appreciate it. This is Mark Levine signing off. Next week is our Dirty Trick Show as we talk about the Virginia elections. Tune in then, same time, 6:30 p.m.
This is the Quality News Network. For the first time, the price of crude oil rose past $93 a barrel today. Analysts say bad weather forced a halt to oil production in Mexico. Mexico is the second largest crude oil supplier to the U.S., behind Canada. 30 Iraqi policemen are dead and at least 20 wounded after a bike-riding suicide bomber attacked a base north of Baghdad. It was one of the deadliest attacks in months. No group claimed responsibility, but officials say the bombing bore the trademark of Al-Qaeda. A U.S. Brigadier General was wounded in a roadside bombing today in northern Iraq. Brigadier General Jeffrey Dorco is the highest-ranking American officer to be hurt since the conflict began in March 2003. His wounds are not life-threatening. In Bakuba, a gruesome discovery. Police say they found 20 decapitated bodies that were dumped near the police station. There's no word on who the victims are. More than 50 Taliban insurgents were killed and wounded in a large Afghan and NATO offensive in southern Afghanistan. The Afghan Defense Ministry said they are conducting a large offensive against Taliban rebels with the NATO-led International Security Assistance Force. Good news from a senior UN nuclear agency official who said cooperation with Iraq was good ahead of talks today about Tehran's atomic work. Last week, Washington imposed bilateral sanctions on Iran because they failed to address the core United Nations demand that they immediately halt sensitive nuclear work. A weekend at Ocean Isle Beach, North Carolina, turned tragic when fire erupted in a vacation home. 7 students from the University of South Carolina died in the fire. 6 others survived. Fire officials say the blaze may have started on a deck. In Southern California, the 7 wildfires still burning are all more than 50% under control. Authorities say the fires destroyed nearly 2,800 buildings, mostly homes, and killed at least 7 people. For the first time, a woman has been elected president in Argentina. The current president's wife, First Lady Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, an attorney and senator, won the election by a huge margin. Boston police in riot gear made 37 arrests early this morning after the Red Sox won their second World Series title. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business, next.
It's not hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now, in 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. Or, for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission, Mary Knoll.
Tropical Storm Knoll pounded Haiti with heavy rains as it moved across the impoverished Caribbean nation. Forecasters say Knoll could drop 10 to 20 inches of rain on the island of Hispaniola. The storm is weakening, though, as it heads toward Cuba and the Bahamas. The worst oil spill in U.S. history now heads to the Supreme Court. ExxonMobil has recorded record profits recently, and now the justices will decide if the oil giant should pay $2.5 billion in punitive damages. Justice Samuel Alito owns between $100,000 to $250,000 in Exxon stock. He has recused himself from the case. Astronauts are working with robotic arms to move a 17.5-ton girder into place on the International Space Station. The beam holds solar panels and is crucial to power the station. The American Academy of Pediatrics is urging all children be tested for autism twice before they turn age 2. There is no cure for the ever-increasingly prevalent disease, but early treatment helps. The dollar dropped to $1.44 against the euro today. It's the weakest since the introduction of the 13-nation common currency in January 1999. Light sweet crude oil is trading up $1.67 at $93.53 a barrel. And on Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was up 64 points. The NASDAQ ended up 13 points and the S&P 500 up 6. There's more on our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Okay, don't you, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK.
Now, head on with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Thank God we made it to Monday. Boy, am I glad to be back with you guys. And you know what? I don't know what I'm going to tell Mark Levine, but if I ever catch him doing that again, I mean, you know, it'd be one thing if I, you know, played something like that and then I had an hour to go get a shower or something. But that, God, I feel like, you know, I'm just glad I'm not anywhere near where he lives because, you know, I would have had to, like, you know, go running into the studio and throw holy water on him or something. Ooh, that was icky. I don't mean the performance was icky, but I mean just... Because you know what? It goes to show you something. What you just heard Mark Levine do. Now, Mike Lane was just over the top, and he was just parodying. But the thing is, there's a little lesson in what Mark Levine did. And it is this. Anybody can be a right-wing idiot yammerhead. And you know what? I'll tell you a secret. If I did that stuff every day, if Mark Levine did that stuff every day, if everybody on the Head On Radio Network, the Horn, did that every day, we would be rich, 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 rich. I mean, you know, lobster-eating rich. Steak and eggs for breakfast, rich. New car when you feel like it, rich. Not double wide rich, triple wide rich. Upstairs and down, a river of beer flowing over your grandmother's paisley shawl, rich. Because that's all right-wing radio is corporate welfare supported shtick. That's it. That's all it is. Oh, some of them believe it. But frankly, the vast majority of them, they don't believe anything. They just don't give a damn. As long as the check clears. As long as they get to keep making that long walk to the mailbox a couple of times a month. As long as the check clears. But no, Mark Levine, Guy James, Peter Godbold, Joe Vecchio, John Fox, our good friend Rick Goodner, Billy Shears, everybody here at the Horn is committed to decency, committed to factualness, committed to, I hate the word truth, but it applies here, committed to a truth that we can do better, we can be better. And so we don't just get out there and spout right-wing palaver. We ask you to engage your own minds. We don't tell you what to think or how to believe. It's all about figuring it out for yourself, even as we figure it out for ourselves. So, you know, good job, Mark, but yeah, you know, I really do need a shower now, and there's nothing I can do about it. It is what I have decided to call Moron Monday, because it follows, as most Mondays do, Talking Head Sunday. And yesterday, and I've got you know, sort of a little moron trifecta for you. Yesterday on Press the Meat or Meet the Russert or This Week with the George Russert Chief or something or Fox Sunday, former Nixon speech writer and right-wing hack William Safire appeared to boldly make predictions, sort of a, you know, he's like, I don't know, he's a political Edgar Casey. He goes to sleep and dreams the sickening BS. So Russert was asking him to make predictions. He predicted, oh, let's see, he predicted Rahm Emanuel for Senator Clinton's vice presidential nominee. He predicted David Petraeus for, what, Rudy Giuliani's vice presidential nominee? And then he was asked what would be the worst thing that could possibly happen to the Republican Party between now and the presidential election, and he said something like, you know, the war dragging on. Well, the war is going to drag on because everybody wants the war to drag on. I don't mean you, I don't mean me, but apparently, far too many people want the war to drag on, as opposed to those who want it to, you know, come to a sensible, sane end. But then Russert has this exchange with moron William Safire with regard to the potential, and he says, you know, the biggest danger to the Democrats is a split in the Democratic Party, a Pelosi-Clinton split. Now, you got to hear his explanation of why this is, and I've got it for you here. His explanation of where a Pelosi-Clinton split would come from.
Well, there are two Democratic parties. The Nancy Pelosi far-left party, which is the base, and...
Huh? Okay, I've slid through into a parallel universe again. The Nancy Pelosi far-left Democratic Party? Let's make sure I heard that right.
Well, there are two Democratic parties. The Nancy Pelosi far-left party, which is the base, and Hillary Clinton, who is not running for the nomination anymore. She's got the nomination in her mind. But she's running for the presidency. And so because of that, she's running a centrist campaign starting now. And that centrist versus base is the tension within the party. And you never can tell. If she stumbles or makes a mistake, wham, you're going to have a big fight.
It's kind of tough to start a show out when with just, you know, abject, utter, complete, unmitigated, pure insanity. Now, I'm as liberal as they come. progressive, whatever word you choose to use. I'm just a liberal. And if there's anybody out there that thinks that Nancy Pelosi is representative of my liberalism or the liberalism of most anybody I know, well, then again, Adolf Hitler is a liberal to William Safire. This old jackass worked for Richard Nixon. What do you want? Senator Clinton is moving to the center, and Congresswoman Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi, is representative of the Democratic Party base? I don't know. If I have to identify myself with anybody in the Democratic Party leadership, and that's if, okay, not that I do, but if I have to, you know, gun pointed at the head, you know, you will do this, Bob, kind of thing, I'll identify myself with Dr. Howard Dean. If we're going to talk about who speaks to true liberalism. Because I don't know if William Safire might not have gotten the memo, but you know what? If we were talking about real liberalism, well, you can't designate somebody queen liberal who said before the 2006 election even took place that impeachment was off the table. You just can't. Where does he get off with this idea that Congresswoman Pelosi is such a, you know, just a big old kumbaya singing, love bead wearing, guitar strumming liberal? Because she's not. Lord God, Nancy Pelosi is entrenched political power and entrenched political money, baby. So, yeah, it's more on Monday. Because William Safire, at least in my book, I don't know about yours, I got a feeling, but William Safire is a moron. But see, that's how the game works. They tell me, oh, you know, Nancy Pelosi's, she's a liberal. I'm a liberal. Trust me, she's no such thing. As a liberal, I believe in things like election reform, campaign finance reform, getting the filthy money in which Nancy Pelosi is wallowing out of the process. I don't just believe in it, I damned well want it. And I agitate for it. I want out of Iraq yesterday. Nancy Pelosi, well, you know, when we get around to it. I want George Bush and Dick Cheney impeached. Impeachment is off the table. So, you know, I mean, but that's how they work. Oh, yeah, she's a liberal. You know? And therefore, Senator Clinton is driving toward the center? Only if the center's way over on the right. At least where things like taking money from pharmaceutical firms and not committing to ending the war in Iraq, voting for war in Iraq, empowering George Bush for a strike on Iran, and there's some sort of out there breaking news about war on Iran. I mean, it's not that breaking, but you might find it interesting. Let's go to the phones real quick, though, because I hate to keep people waiting. Hey, who have I got?
Hey, Bob, Phil in Daytona Beach.
Hey, Phil, how are you, my friend?
I'm okay, thanks. And man, I couldn't wait to dial in listening to what you were going on about. And look, the media is controlling us if we let it.
Oh, they're certainly trying to control the message. There's no doubt about it.
Yes, but it's working, Bob.
But wait, Phil. Before we go too much further, let's analyze this just a little bit.
Okie doke.
William Safire, who again, you know, worked for Richard Nixon and is forever tarred with that very, very broad brush. Yesterday described Senator Clinton as a centrist and Nancy Pelosi as some sort of wild-eyed, damn near a Marxist liberal.
Right, I was listening to you.
And so what's the message there from William Safire? It sounds like it's actually a message that works to Senator Clinton's benefit.
It works. We've got to get beyond Clinton and Pelosi and Safire and Giuliani and the Republicans. This is no longer a left-right Democrat-Republican battle we have going here. That is the thing to keep us our eye off the ball, Bob. We have a criminal enterprise that has stolen our government, and they've hijacked both our political parties.
Yeah, and they largely do that with money, of course.
Well, Jesus, the thing is that, and they're controlling the debate, they're controlling the topics of discussion. We have a president and a vice president and a whole line of people that right after them that for years now we have evidence that demands that screams for their impeachment. We have an illegal war of aggression going on in our name, being continuously not only stopped or tried to stop, but actually funded by both political parties, Democrats and Republicans, in the House and the Senate. We've got an election for president campaign that was launched, what, a year early or half a year early, as the cries for impeachment started to get louder, and all the evidence of the deliberate lies to start an illegal war of an aggression and have surfaced, and the American people are falling for it. The even C-SPAN, Bob, you cannot call into C-SPAN and bring up impeachment. They won't allow it. They won't allow it. And so what do we do? And I have a suggestion, but I
okay,
just
go ahead.
Really bombarded you with a lot of words.
No, that's okay. Go right ahead.
We got it. The media is totally controlled by this. This is a criminal
the media,
people.
Yeah, Phil, the media are dead, okay? I mean, this is...
But it's still what people listen to, Bob, for the most part.
Yeah, it is. That's what makes... I mean, I know this sounds like a shameless bit of self-promotion, but that's what makes what's going on here so important, because
exactly.
Everybody isn't, okay? There are a lot of people who are... I probably watched more television this weekend than I have in a year, okay? Because I sat down...
To truth detox.
Well, I mean, I sat down, I watched a little football, I watched a little bit of the World Series, and I clicked across long enough to find out that Nostradamus predicted the existence of Osama bin Laden. So, you know, I mean, as quick as I saw that, it was like click and off and, you know, we're gone. Because, you know, same crap, different day.
Well, let me give you a thing that I've been watching, and it's a great model. It's the We Are Change groups. And what they do, they're active citizens that are throwing the bodies into of this machine that's been owning all of us and continuing this war, which includes the phony politicians, the phony left-right, liberal, conservative, they're crooks, they're criminals wearing suits that say D and R. But when you look at their votes and you look what they've done and not done, And don't listen to what they say. You look at what they've done and not done, and you look at their votes. They're criminals. And that's what we got to look at. And these We Are Change groups, you know, they started off confronting elected officials, getting right out in the public square. If there's a book signing or a political speech, they come out and they question, you know, 9/11 cover up. You know, regardless of who you believe brought the buildings down, the government story is bullshit. You know, and it was covered up. So they're, I don't know. I just went off on that tangent. But what I'm trying to say is, talk is cheap. We had one congresswoman from Florida was one of the speakers, and she was sounded all good and everybody's cheering. But I don't think she signed on to Kasunis' 333. And I have to question, I haven't done the research yet, but I want to see if she's actually voted yes on any funding, you know?
Right.
And you know, because these people talk a good game and everybody cheers, but we have to be... And I want to talk about impeachment and the Downing Street memo, the White House memo, the CIA leak, the October...
I got one for you. I was kind of saving it for later in the show, but you might find this little snippet of information interesting, Phil. In the latest $190 billion emergency war funding supplemental that George Bush is asking for...
Yes.
Okay. You know, way down in there, you know, somewhere after the $793 toenail clippers... there is the Bush administration quietly asks for $88 million to retrofit B-2 stealth bombers so that they will be able to carry one 30,000-pound
bunker busters.
Bingo.
Yes, and this is my point, Bob. This is my point. These things... We have got to get right to the heart of it. We have got to say, stop. These guys, we have evidence that they lied to start this war, and that it should be number one on the list right now. Why aren't you dealing with this here? And the D.C., there's a group in Washington, D.C., an active group that came up with this misprision of treason.
Yeah, misprison of treason.
Yeah, thank you. You know, where once you sent somebody with information that indicates an act of treason and they become aware of it, then they are party to the matter.
Yeah,
they
complicit.
They don't do anything, you know, about it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, people... There was the Philadelphia platform July 4th this past year was a gathering of the different groups, the impeachment groups, the anti-war groups, and the those calling for an investigation into the 9/11 attacks to get the effing truth, wherever the truth takes us. And what it was is it's a platform that site actindependent.org, and it's an effort to bring our people together and try to get over whatever little problems we have with each other's perceived missions or whatever, and realize we have the same adversary here, the same crew that is hurting us all and who has stolen us our country, and that's the criminal Bush-Cheney regime. And the Congress, the complicit Congress, they're complicit, Bob.
Yes, they are. They are, that's one word for it. They are collaborators. They are, I don't know, the Vichy Congress. I mean, call it what you will. Sure. We have a real problem in terms of just figuring out who we can go to.
That's what I mean. We have to go to ourselves now, and that's what this We Are Change group is doing. And I encourage people to you know...
Well, I understand the principle, Phil. What I'm trying to figure out, though, is if you motivate the American people, they go to... sooner or later, we have to go to our elected representatives to demand action on what it is we want, right?
We should be dictating the topic of discussion. And that's what the We Are Change people, their model. That's what their... model is, and I haven't seen it in the anti-war, you know, enough in the anti-war and impeachment community, and I think I've been talking about this all weekend, you know, when any of these politicians open their mouth and start, you know, or even I'm supposed to be in on a call-in show tomorrow, and if you know, as far as being interviewed as the Veterans for Peace spokesperson here mm-hmm. in Central Florida, you know, and I'm just waiting for the question to be asked about, you know, who do you, how do you see this election or whatever. I say I see this election as something we should not be talking about. Here's what we need to be talking about, you know. You know, the Downing Street memo, the White House, and bring it back, you know, where we, once any opportunity we have in talking with any media or any politician, to say, this is not what we should be talking about. Here's what we should be talking about, and you should be asking this representative, you know, what he is not doing about the Downing Street memo or the information that's been presented
And when they say something like, well, you know, that's not within the purview of my committee.
But you know, the thing is, then I say BS. We have information here that indicates that the, you know, there were deliberate lies, you know. You're aware of it, and you're refusing to deal with that. How do you explain yourself to your constituents and the American people and the soldiers that are dying on a lie, you know, on this lie, you know? And to just get in their face, I wish I could speak more intelligently about this right now.
No, you're doing fine.
You know, but my point is, man, we are running out of time, and this whole people... The Democratic Party and the Republican Party, it's a sham right now. It's not what it used to be. Every single, out of all the 20 people running for president within the two parties, there are three people who are not members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Three. Two of them are Democrats, Mike Gravel and Dennis Kucinich, and one's a Republican, and that's Ron Paul. Three, and the only three that are not anti-war, that were, and they're also the same that were calling for immediate withdrawal of the troops and returning our Constitution back to the people, you know, get rid of this damn Patriot Act, you know, the rest are criminals, man, posing as, it's a sham, and I say we don't engage in it.
Well, how do you respond, though, Phil? When you look at a larger picture, and I mean, because this is the kind of stuff that I sit around thinking about. When it comes down to whoever, whatever Democrat runs against whatever Republican, because that's going to be the choice. Okay, I mean the way the Constitution's set up, it's just what we get.
Yeah.
Let's say it's Senator Clinton versus Rudy Giuliani. Okay, you gonna stay home over that?
No. Here's what I'm saying: we gotta act now, as they're running around, and that's what these We Are Change people are doing. They, if you go to the website, people, wearechange.org, you'll see that different group. We have one in Florida, wearechangefl.org. You know, that confronted Giuliani. You know, they go. These people are all campaigning. You know, and they're going everywhere, and you can. They say you can go on the internet and type in, like, you know, or just find out where the different, or even on C-SPAN's website, you can find out, or even on the candidates' websites themselves. And they're going around bad-handing people looking for votes and money. And that's when they're in your neck of the woods. So when they're in our neck of the woods, we go to their events. And we get up, and when we have the opportunity, and these kids with the We Are Change, they bring their camcorders. And they have one person who has their camcorder and another one who's asking the questions, you know. And you could say, well, you know, the Downing Street memo, Congressman John Conyers had the hearings in 2005, you know, about the Downing Street memo. Now there's the White House memo and the Melbourne memo. As well as, you know, the blah, 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 whatever. You come in kind of prepared.
Yeah.
You know, this demands impeachment according to the Constitution. I think we should be Why are you not calling for impeachment? And you put them on the spot. You put these people on the spot, and then what they do is they come back and they upload it onto Google Video or YouTube, and it's on the website, and it goes all over the place. And then it'll get linked up to AfterDowningStreet.org or the WeAreChange.org or Infowars.com, and these things go. And this is what we have to do. You say, what about the congressional testimony of CIA analyst Paul Pillar, who wrote the October 2002 National Intelligence Estimate? He testified that there were no weapons of mass destruction, and they lied, you know? And it never got out of the subcommittee, Bob. They had the testimony of the guy, and it never went anywhere.
Right.
The media is totally owned. The politicians, Democrats and Republicans, are totally owned. And we have to take our... We actually have to take our country back. It's the whole thing with this election and all this. It's gone, man. It's make believe. It's been taken from us. We have to actually fight and take our country back. It's already been taken.
Yeah. No. I'm not disagreeing you on the vast majority of what you're talking about, Phil. I understand it very well, and I believe in the concept of civil disobedience and direct confrontation. Where I get stymied, though, is the point at which we still have a representative form of government, and we've got to make these people do our bidding. And to that end, and I don't know where these people come from. I had an email, or not an email exchange, but I guess it was a message board exchange over the weekend, talking about people getting involved in the process.
Yes.
Because you can go and confront these people, and maybe, you know, you'll embarrass them on YouTube. And I'm not in any way downplaying the value of that. You know, George Allen is not a senator from Virginia now because of his YouTube macaca moment. And what a benefit and what a service that was to this country.
Yes.
On the other hand...
But it's not just the YouTube, Bob. It's when you're in this forum, right?
Yeah.
Say Giuliani comes to Daytona Beach, and he and this other guy went out there. This was a couple of... He was going to be in front of he was going to be the Grand Marshal for the Firecracker 400 or whatever. One guy, my buddy, went in with a camcorder. He got in. He was trying to ask a question. I was on the outside with a sign. It was real short notice, you know. Mm-hmm. But I was out there, and I had flyers printed up about Giuliani, you know, and the proof that, you know, he was told the towers were coming down by Peter, you know, on Peter. He's on tape talking to Peter Jennings. Well, you know, and I prepared a media kit, because what you do is you have the newspapers and the TVs and all that out at these events, and when Simpson gets up and asks that question, all those people are there listening. It's on film, whether or not it makes the 6 o'clock news or not.
Right, and I understand. Yeah, it's one of the same things I was mentioning the other night when we were down there listening to Scott Ritter, and that was, you know, there were no TV trucks with little satellite dishes on the top, you know, beep 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 beep, blinking away or anything. There was nothing, not a blessed word being said in the Kanawha Valley of West Virginia on Thursday night, October the 25th, that was any more important than what Scott Ritter was saying to those 250 or so people in that room at West Virginia State University. The local media, they weren't there. There was nobody with a radio station flag on a microphone. There was nobody there with a TV camera. There was nobody, nothing, just the head-on radio network.
Right.
And that's because, you know...
We got to go to them, is what I'm saying, because they're the ones dictating that Rudy Giuliani, Hillary Clinton, what's her name out there in San Francisco who's obstructing justice by taking the impeachment off the train?
Nancy Pelosi, sure.
Right. I mean, all of them. You see, we got to go to the cameras, you know? We can no longer ask... We're every day that we're playing by their rules... And thinking they're going to change is another day that this crap continues. And the torch, it's already been... Hillary Clinton has been the designated one. She's the one who's the pawn's going to get passed to. That's already a known, and Giuliani's the fallback. You know, those are the ruling elite's two people. And get real with it, people. You know, get real with it, man, because people are dying. The longer we're not...
I know, I know.
This, you know,
I know, Phil, I know. I mean, for God's sakes, we're hearing on the news today that an Al-Qaeda bicyclist took out 28 people in Baghdad today. We're getting our asses kicked by people on bicycles now. You know, there are, I'm sure there are, there's a joke in there somewhere, but I can't really find the funny part, except, you know, the part of the news story that said, experts say that it bore all the earmarks of an Al-Qaeda terrorist. Really? Really? A guy on a bicycle with a bomb strapped to him bears all the earmarks of an Al-Qaeda terrorist. I mean, what, did he have a little, Al-Qaeda bicycle horn? You know, ding, 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 ding. I mean, is there a secret bell signal for Al-Qaeda now?
Now, if we don't force the story to be the story we want to talk about, we're going to be hearing about Al-Qaeda bicycle bombs 5-6 years from now.
There was a news story out last week warning us that there's still a distinct possibility of shoe bombs.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And so what we got to say, in my opinion, Bob, is, hey, I don't want to talk about that right now. Here's what I want to talk about. See what I mean? I want to talk about, we got proof that this president lied, Downing Street memo, whatever proof, you know. We got proof right here, and we're ready to present it to Congress. We have one Congressman, Kucinich, who has a case for impeachment. I don't want to talk about a bicycle bomb. I want to talk about this right now. We don't let them say this is going to be the story.
Well, I've just heard...
feed us the story, you know, I say, no thanks. You know, push the plate back and say, this is what I want to talk about. I think, and that's what these We Are Change people are doing. They're going in, they're going to I encourage everybody to go to the We Are Change and watch these people in action. And a lot of them, it's not just 9/11 people, and 9/11, get what the people, these criminals did it. And whether you want to believe it or not, that's what happened, man. And if you got to get real with it, because they're carrying out more crimes, and we got to stop them. It's not just 9/11, though, the We Are Change. If you go to, like, the We Are Change, wearechangefl.org, the Florida chapter, you know, they're adopting the Philadelphia platform that was put together this summer with the Iraq Veterans Against the War, Military Families Speak Out, the different impeachment. David Lindorf was there. You know, a bunch
of
the...
I remember the event very well. I'd love to have been there myself.
The Philadelphia platform, meaning, look, man, we gotta stop falling for the bait here where they say, you know, this left-right liberal conservative, oh, he's a this, I don't want to hear what he has to say, you know, this, that, oh, 9/11, that's a conspiracy theory, I don't want to get anywhere near that. Look, we got to join together as Americans and stop this criminal enterprise, man, and nobody's going to do it for us, man.
No, nobody, no, the end of the war has got to come from a groundswell of the American people.
Yes.
Whether the American people want to create that groundswell, I don't know.
Well, you know, this past weekend was good.
It was good. Marches all over the country, by raising the awareness. If somewhere along the way two minds get changed, then that's the potential to change 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128. You know how it goes.
Right, but again, you know, right here in Orlando, you know, we had a good march and everything, and it was the Students for Democratic Society, it was organized labor, it was veterans, anti 9/11 truth all over the place. We are all getting screwed by this criminal enterprise that's stolen our country, and that criminal enterprise pretty much includes almost everyone in Congress and in Senate people, so don't give them the time. And we've got to go confront them. We can't just do a march and say, you know, and get mad at the local media for not covering it or covering it correctly. We have actually got to take advantage of all these events where these politicians appear publicly and do what those people did on the Bill Maher show, you know, speak up. We got to fight to take our country back.
I got to tell you, Phil, I disagree with you on the Bill Maher business. That was just I'm not going to say inappropriate. No, it achieved nothing.
It did. You heard about it.
Yeah, because I'm plugged in. I follow this stuff.
It's all over the internet. It was on CNN. Got all the talking heads talking about it now. It was all over the they had to defend it.
Defend
and
what?
Now, just because of that, you got a bunch of Hollywood people are being asked about it. You know, what do you think about these 9/11 truth people confronting Bill Maher and Bill Maher having them tossed out and saying, you know, ass kickings involved?
Well, I mean, in all honesty, Phil, what was he supposed to do? Let them sit there and scream their fool heads off 360-minute show?
This is my point, Bob. We have to make our we have to have our issues addressed. They're not going to address them for us, no matter how many people we have in the street marching, and how, you know, we have to put it on the table ourselves. We've got to fight to take it back, man. We've got to force the issue in every way possible and at every opportunity. And
I believe in confronting politicians, because if a politician can't handle a straightforward question, they've got no business in office. I think back to the little YouTube video of the guy in the wheelchair asking a simple question of Mitt Romney: if you become president, will you have me arrested?
Right.
Over medical marijuana.
Right.
And Romney gave a BS answer, and he moved on. Hi, glad to see you. Nice to see you. Thanks for coming out this morning. Hey, how are you? And the guy asked him, you're not going to answer his question?
Right.
I think I did. No, he asked you if you were going to have him arrested, and you didn't give an answer to the question. I believe in deviling a politician, because if a politician can't take that, a politician has no business being a representative and a public servant.
But you see, what I'm saying is, we're already... By doing that, and I'm not discounting that or minimizing it, but that's already changing the focus or the agreed upon common ground back to a 2008 November election for president. See what I mean? I'm saying we got a criminal enterprise, no matter who get selected or elected, whatever, in November 8th, already part of this continuation of war making in the Middle East. Iran is part of the plan.
Iran is coming. Iran is next.
Because we're letting it be next, Bob. It's up to we, the people, to stop it. And damn it, you know...
So all the people out there that are writing letters, calling congressmen every day, doing everything in their power to keep this from happening, they're still letting it happen?
Yes, because we haven't stopped it. So I'm not saying don't do that, but we have to keep looking around and being open to ideas and strategies that will work to achieve goals. And that's why I'm saying we gotta, you know, this is hardball, man. Our country's been stolen, man. Our kids are being sent 4 or 5 times to an illegal war, and they're actually committing war crimes.
Oh, I know,
and it's still going on in our name, and we can't concede.
I don't think I've ever conceded, Phil.
But we can't concede to the 08 election. See, and that's what that's what's been.
Oh, I realize what. Okay, you know? Okay, that part I've got because when we the 2008 election, when we start talking about what happens in 2008, that means we've given up on the idea that the war can end before then.
Right, and that these damn criminals, we gotta put the damn Constitution right in these. I think we need to try these tactics that are having an effect with the 9/11 truth community. I think we need to adopt these tactics. Well, my buddy's here. He's a former Green Beret. He just walked in. I'm not gonna, you know. He's a Gulf War vet.
Okay.
When your tactics ain't working, the military. Right, and if you see something the enemy's doing and it's working, see, this is what I'm saying, man. You know, you got to use what the heck works. You might go in with a game plan, man. Well, you like football or whatever. You go in with a game plan, and your game plan ain't working against the defense. What, do you just keep running off tackle and getting stuffed? No, you go back into the, you know, you call a timeout and say, hey, this crap ain't working, man. You know, what else can we try? You see what I mean?
Yeah, and I'm behind that. Don't give up. Try it if it works.
Yeah.
I mean, the woman with the red hands confronting Condoleezza Rice last week was beautiful.
Yes, and did you see how the cops, they went right after the other Code Pink women that were sitting in the back and didn't do a daggone thing, and that was unlawful. We are in Nazi Germany, and it was the Democratic-led hearing. Tom Lantos was pointing his finger to have those women thrown out. We are in Nazi Germany already, people. We got to fight. We're beyond what it's supposed to be. We're past that. We're in Nazi Germany. We're in it. The woman with the Code Pink, with the blood on her hands, she gets hauled out. We're becoming accustomed to that. We're becoming accustomed to our servant government in our halls of Congress that we own. Those are our halls of Congress. Those are our employees.
Right, but when you protest, don't you expect to be removed? I mean, isn't that the whole purpose of a sit-in or a die-in or an anything-in? I mean, isn't that the statement in itself, Phil?
Right, but we're under the impression, though, that we work for them or they're above us. We need to remind the American people who owns the Congress, the buildings. Those are our employees. We're paying them, and we got to start standing up to them like that woman. But what those cops did when Lantos waving his finger, pointing over, and they
when they broke that pastor's leg a few weeks ago, exactly. that was uncalled for too. Sure.
And what I'm saying is, this has become accepted. We've got to say no, man. We've got to do more, is what I'm saying, Bob. You know, and we've got to employ.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how anybody could ask you or Code Pink to do more. I mean, it seems like there's 24 hours a day, and those 24 are already getting filled every blessed day with action.
That's what I'm saying.
I admire that.
But, man, you know, we got to get more people. It's like, you know, we've had the same first couple out on the dance floor for 5 or 6 years now, for crying out loud. When are the rest of the couples coming out and fill out the dance floor? You know what I'm saying? And it ain't that, you know, there have been more and more people coming out finally. But what I'm saying is, we got to fight to get our country back, man, and that means turning off the GD television.
Hear, hear.
Jesus, take the $50 or $75 or whatever the heck it is that you're paying this cable company to lie to you 24/7, and tell them no. Stop paying them. Stop feeding the monster. You know, put it to the
get out. Get a little fresh air for crying out loud. Sure.
You see what I mean? And then get out and be the media ourselves, Bob. I mean, we are really, we're in Nazi Germany right now, and the people are willfully asleep, and you know, by putting your hands over your eyes ain't going to make it pay.
Well, I think you're talking to people here, Phil. If there's anybody on Earth that does not have their hands over their eyes,
yes,
this is that group.
Exactly.
I wish this was a sort of a meeting place for more of the people with the eyes wide open, the crowd.
Well, you know what I'm wondering, Bob, and I'd like to know how many of the listeners are you know, actually out in the public square, whether it be handing out flyers about, you know, impeachment or 9/11 truth or whatever, you know, are they giving, how many, you know, can they do more? Are they, you know, how many of the listeners are actually doing something? I'm not saying they're not. But if there are listeners now who are with us in, you know, in mind and spirit, but if they still ain't got the body out there, man, you got to get the body out, you know. And those of us who are out in the public square and are doing these things, and you say, you know, like Cole Pink, how can we ask more of what they're already doing? That's like what my friend Roberto here, the Special Forces guy, just said. You know, hey, man, if what we're doing ain't working, man, we better think of something else or find out a different way or something to be more effective. And that's where I say, folks, go to wearechange.org and look at what these folks are doing with the, you know, actually going to the media and changing the discussion. You know, they're up there talking about, well, when I'm elected president, I'm going to, you know, have cheaper health care or whatever bullshit, you know. And somebody in the crowd stands up and says, hey, what about Building 7? Or, hey, what about the Downing Street memo? Why aren't we prosecuting the president for the Downing Street memo? And make them address it, or at least have the question heard by the audience. We had the Democratic State Convention same day, Saturday, and this guy, Senator Bill Nelson, walks in, and you got all these people at the convention stand up and give him a standing ovation.
Oh, look, I mean, I was at the big Democratic shindig in this state 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, 3 weeks ago, and at the mere mention of the name Robert Byrd, everybody just burst into applause like they just said Jesus' name, okay? I understand that.
So,
I understand.
So that's why, you know, but that's what I'm saying, Bob, you know, there's still, we haven't even dealt with this crowd. We've got to be at these events and say, you know, like, you know, be the lone voice and be the person that, or someone who stands in line with the microphone and say, we have impeachable offenses. You're here talking about running for president in 08. What about impeaching Bush right now? You have that, you know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. Our woman, Beverly Wiskow of the Military Family Speak Out, she could have been in the rally with us on Friday, but she realized the importance of going to this event with the State Democratic Party in Orlando and doing what we were just talking about.
Oh, there was a guy at your state party the meeting who has been the party's nominee in one of the congressional districts that was thrown out because he came in there advocating progressive issues like impeachment and, you know, law and order, crime punishment, you know, for, you know, real crimes. He was thrown out. It was captured on video. I was reading a little bit about it earlier today.
I have to go look at that. That's Florida?
Yeah.
Saturday?
Yeah.
Well, see, then that's good.
He went from the march to the convention and was thrown out.
Then it worked. That's what I'm saying. Because had everyone just stayed at the march, that convention wouldn't have even heard about whatever. You see what I mean? We've got to go to these things and show up and have somebody do that and say, hey, wait, this is bullshit, you know? Or,
yeah.
Wait a minute, you know, what's... and that's what we're doing. The community, the activist community, is we are continuing to learn as we go and realize whatever we haven't been doing hasn't been, whatever we've been doing hasn't been enough. And I'm going to have to call my friend Beverly, because I saw her at the rally and she said she was going, they were going back to the convention and we'd hear about whatever they were going to do, and it sounds like I just heard about it.
Well, I'm trying to find the email that I got, and I can't. I don't see it. I don't see it here. But yeah, I did. I read about it just earlier today.
So that what that does is you got all of a sudden you got these 3,000 people, loyal Democrats or whatever, how many there were there, 300, I don't know how many, 1,000, let's say, that all paid this money, and then somebody stands up and says, hey, what about impeachment, you know, this, that, and the other thing, and if that person didn't stand up and say that, it would never have been heard, you see what I mean? And there wouldn't have been an embarrassing moment, and it wouldn't have made it to being talked about on the head on radio network, you know, and who knows where it'll go from here. We have to take it to them.
I agree with that kind of action. I do, Phil.
Yeah.
We're late for the news, though.
Oh God, thanks for letting me ramble.
Don't thank me. I should be thanking you. Two, you didn't ramble. Okay? This is if we can't do this, there's no sense in me there's no sense in the network existing. Okay? This is what we're designed for, Phil.
I know, and I spread the horn all the time. Oh, and I know you have to go, but getting back to Pelosi, Robert Fisher, I don't know if I sent you the contact information for him. He's a social worker.
Yeah, I get his emails quite frequently.
He'd be a great guy to talk to if you ever have time for him in your slots upcoming. He's really been pushing to get a candidate to run against Pelosi, and now that Cindy Sheehan will be running, this guy's, he's a perfect example of just a normal person who said enough and actually did something, you know? I mean, just as a normal person. And when it's like the people being the first on the dance, you see someone go up there and they're able to dance, then you're able to go up and dance too.
Absolutely.
You know?
All right, Phil, thanks a lot. Give my regards to your buddy there.
Oh, you bet. The Head On Radio Network says hi to you. Roberto says hi back.
All right, cool. We'll talk to you soon, Phil.
Thank you, Bob.
Take care.
Get involved, people. Do more.
Keep at it.
Thank you.
Bye now. I love the passion that Phil brings to his life. A couple of million Phils, we'd be out of this war. Right? Yep. All right, so we're 5 minutes late for the news. We're going to get to the news anyway. We'll be back with more of your phone calls to 877-404-877. The number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. See what a weekend does to me? 304-658-5453. That's the direct dial number if you want to save us a nickel. You're listening to America's listener-supported, listener-built, listener-maintained, liberal voice, independent media in its purest form. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. For the first time in Argentina, a woman elected president. She is the current president's wife, First Lady Cristina Fernandez, an attorney and senator. She won election by a landslide. The UN's nuclear watchdog saying there's no proof Iran is building nuclear weapons. The agency says growing threats by the U.S. against Iran could, quote, bring disaster. More than 100,000 Turkish troops poised at the border to battle the 3,000 Kurd militants hiding in Iraq. Helicopters pounded Kurdish positions over the weekend. At least 20 people were killed. Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah accusing British officials of ignoring Saudi intelligence back in 2005. The king says the information could have prevented the London terrorist bombings that killed 52, injuring more than 700. In Baghdad, 8 of 11 Sunni and Shiite sheikhs were released after they were abducted while on their way to the Diyala province. At least one of the sheikhs was found shot to death. A suicide bomb detonated outside a police training camp in Bakuba, killing at least 30 recruits and wounding more than 20. Israel slashing fuel supplies to Gaza in retaliation for Palestinian militant rocket attacks aimed at southern Israel. A spokesman for the United Nations says the concern now is for those living and working in the Gaza who could be adversely affected. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, meantime, today announcing he has prostate cancer. He says he'll have surgery and remain in office. Seven students from the University of North Carolina died in a beach house fire overnight. Six others survived. Fire officials say flames may have ignited from an outside deck. Five remaining wildfires still burning in Southern California are all now more than 65% under control. Authorities say nearly 2,800 buildings have been destroyed, most of them homes. At least seven people have died, 50 have been injured. The American Bar Association wants to put a stop to the death penalty in most states. A newly released report indicating some mistakes in prosecution, unconstitutional methods of execution, and more. And country western star Porter Wagoner passed away at a Nashville hospital last night at the age of 80. He was best known for a string of hits in the 1960s and the discovery of Dolly Parton. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll check science and business news just ahead.
Do you know the expression, put on your best face? Never was that suggestion more important, especially in the increasingly fast-paced world of the Internet. The people at Byte Technology are experts in making sure that the hits their clients' websites receive turn into a satisfying visit and more business. Byte gets to the core of every business and brings the heart of the operation to the Internet. Whether you are selling products or services, reaching out for new business, or supplying information to a sector of the business community, it is vital that you attract the right visitors and deliver them what they need quickly and effectively. Byte Technology goes further, providing maintenance updates to keep your site ahead of the curve, ahead of the competition. Assure your company's future. Talk with the team at Byte Technology to learn how you can put on your best internet face. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
Discovery astronauts working aboard the International Space Station finding equipment far more damaged than first thought. They're working hard up there. The American Academy of Pediatrics urging all children be tested for autism twice before they turn age two. There's no cure for the ever-increasingly prevalent disease, but early treatment does help. The 14th named storm of the Atlantic hurricane season, Tropical Storm Noel, has flooded Haiti, now the Dominican Republic, heading toward Cuba and Jamaica. At this time, forecasters say Noel will probably turn toward the Bahamas instead of the oil-rich Gulf of Mexico. Company officials for Gap Incorporated claim they didn't know child slaves produced their goods in India until a London newspaper published an exposé. The company says it will investigate. Volkswagen reporting a higher-than-expected quarterly profit, the German automaker crediting strong sales in Asia, Europe, and South America. British Telecom announcing a 7-year deal with Swiss pharmaceutical company Novartis, the contract valued at $500 million. Lightsweet crude trading at $93.53 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. That's up $1.67, a record setter. Gold trading at $792.60 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 63 points at 13,870. More on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
See, I got to do the news because otherwise... It's just a three solid hour filibuster. You understand. Couple of emails before we go right back to the phones. You know the numbers, of course, 304-658-5453 or 877, the numeral 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Our good friend and Night Sounds host Billy Shears has written in with a note, and I'm glad he did because it reminded me of something. Something he's writing about. He says, hats off to Rick Goodner's weekend show, Rick's Place. I'll tell you what I like about his show. He has a real believable and holds your attention manner about him. Oh, he has a real believable and holds your attention manner about him. Rick is very creative the way he ties in music with his message. If you're not tuning into Weekends on the Horn, you're missing something really Goodner. Ba-dum-bum, really Goodner. Rick Goodner, Rick's Place, Weekends on the Horn. It runs in hard rotation with Night Sounds, brought to you, of course, by Billy Shears. And, well, let's go to the phones and see who's there. I had a chance to check one line during the news, and I believe Susan is with us. Hey, Susan.
Hi.
How are you?
Yeah, well, if I suddenly dump you, it'll be because my hubby got delivered.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, we're glad he's coming home.
Yeah, so am I. I'm rather pissed.
Okay.
Yeah.
How so?
If you... Phil's philosophy of doing more to its logical conclusion... Then you get the Symbionese Liberation Army tactic of knocking off banks. Needless to say, that doesn't go over well with the FBI.
True.
General public.
And I didn't get the sense that Phil was talking about by any means necessary. You know, the old saying from who was it, Malcolm X or whatever. Because that does not foreclose violence. I reject wholeheartedly violence. I reject it out of hand.
He also neglected to mention something else.
Okay.
Do more. Fine. What happens if you can't?
What happens if you've done as much as you can humanly do?
Yeah.
Do you just say that everything has been in vain and walk away? No, I don't think so.
Bad because Phil is on the phone saying you're not good enough.
Are you saying, are you saying that this struck some sort of a personal chord with you, Susan?
Yeah, it did.
Okay.
Physically, I'm not capable of going out and doing my. I can't walk. I can barely walk up the stairs.
Right.
Anything more than that, and I run the risk of landing in the morgue.
That is...
Any kind of physical strain will put me in the morgue. I'm balanced on that kind of edge.
Okay.
But that doesn't stop you from being
very, very active in terms of agitating and militating against your elected representatives. I mean, we've heard about that on, you know, a number of occasions. I know that you do that stuff.
I have to confine myself to the computer, to things like when I go into the VA hospital, I walk in there wearing an Impeach Bush t-shirt and start handing out business cards.
Yeah.
But then along and says that's not good enough.
Oh, I don't... I hate being in a position of speaking for someone else, but I don't think that was the thrust of his...
Well, that's not good enough, but that's the impression I got. And that's what ticked me off, because I'm sure there's a lot of other people like me who are... And I know one, our other news ninja, who also is disabled.
Mm-hmm.
and who also is severely limited in what he can do. But he certainly does a whole bunch with what he can.
You're damn right. I think a lot of what Phil was talking about, you know, when he tells, you know, give up the cable, get out of the house, he's talking to the people who aren't doing anything at all.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Do something. Even if it's wrong, do something. But, you know, make it a point to mention, hey, if you're already doing as much as you can, keep it up.
Yeah. Susan, I sit here, and I heard the other night our dear friend Mike Malloy say something very similar. And this is not meant to parrot what he had said. I imagine it's something that goes on inside the heads of a lot of people who do the kind of thing that he has been doing for decades and that I've been doing for about a half a decade now. And that is sitting behind this microphone and trying to talk about things that are getting ignored by the mainstream media and somehow getting a sense that you're accomplishing something out of it. Okay?
Yeah.
And what he said is he feels like he's doing nothing, just to paraphrase. And I feel something very similar. I'm 50 miles from the nearest anywhere that anybody marches. Okay?
Yeah.
I'm 50 miles from the nearest protest.
That sitting behind that microphone is the most important thing you can do, either you or Mike, because your voice goes out to thousands of people. You reach a whole lot more than you ever could by going into a march.
I know that. I know that intellectually, okay? Emotionally, my brain, my heart tells me it is not enough. And so I understood some of what Phil was saying, because you know what? Nobody does more than what Phil does. Okay? That guy's out there, rain or shine. He tries to make a difference. He tries to make it count every blessed day of his existence. And I laud that. I revere that. And I revere that along with what you do and what other people on this network do. I revere it wholeheartedly. But watching what is happening, Susan, I don't think Phil was aiming this at anybody in particular. But watching what is happening, watching how it's going down, cannot help but engender, and I've heard it in your own voice as well, you know, because you call these people, you call and you write, and it seems like nothing matters, nothing happens, nothing's going on. William Sapphire sitting on Meet the Press saying that Nancy Pelosi is a wild-eyed liberal. Jesus, is anybody paying attention?
I have one little piece of news.
Yeah?
We have a primary challenger, Gordon Smith.
Now, Gordon is a Republican, right?
Yeah, among other things, he voted against, he filibustered the Dream Bill.
Yeah.
And then when I tried to call his office about it, they waffled and tried to deny they filibustered it.
Lying bastards.
Lying.
So somebody's going to run against him in the primary?
Yeah.
Is this person to the right or left of him?
To the left.
Well, very good.
Democrat.
No. Wait. Oh, I don't know. Maybe I don't understand Oregon election politics. A primary isn't for Republican. There's not a Republican primary and a Democratic primary.
Yeah, there is.
But a Democrat's... Oh, okay, so he switched his party registration? Is that what you're telling me?
No. What I'm saying is... Generally, he runs unopposed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it looks like we have a viable candidate to hit him in the election. His name is Steve Novick.
Okay.
N-O-V-I-C.
Novick, okay.
He has a nice little column in Op-Ed News. In fact, I put it up on the blog. It's called Killing a Dream, Gordon Smith Votes Against Innocent Children.
Well, you know, we knew what a sleaze fest this was going to be. I mentioned it briefly on Friday night's program. Tom Tancredo moving to have arrested anybody who showed up to support the DREAM Act at a news conference scheduled by the Democrats in the middle of last week.
Oh, yeah, he got a call from me today, too.
He called the Iceman on them. Yeah, he's announced, Tancredo has, that he won't run in 2008. Kind of makes you wish it was 2008 already, doesn't it? Or actually 2009. I don't know. That's not fair because, you know, you say, I wish it was 2009 already. I wish it was January. I wish we were getting rid of Bush. How many more American soldiers, mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters, would be weeping into their hands at funerals? And no, we can't wish the time pass faster. We cannot.
No, I just wish they were all home. And I got to tell you something. I had a talk with the local president of the VFW Women's Auxiliary.
Okay.
And she scared the hell out of
me. How so?
One of the mildest statements she had was, I wish we'd just go over there and nuke them until they glowed.
Oh, those people are still out there. Those people have been fighting amongst themselves for 7 million years, and we're not... Yeah, that stuff went on during the Vietnam conflict, too, and just... Oof. Because it's a way of dehumanizing them, you see.
Yeah, I swear to God.
Well, she may get her wish, because like I said talking to Phil, I don't know if you caught that little nugget along the way, Susan, but buried inside George Bush's emergency...
Bunkers.
Yeah. The retrofitting B-2 bombers with $88 million to carry 30,000-pound MOPs, MOPs, massive ordnance penetrators.
Yeah.
Guess that ain't for caves in Afghanistan, and it's damn sure not for Iraq. Guess who that's for?
Yeah, it's for those 3-year-old babies in Iran.
Sure. It's for a country that hasn't invaded another country in over 300 years.
Yeah, we need to put a face to those babies.
I know. You know what? I was thinking the other night after talking with Scott Ritter that one of the coolest things that could possibly happen would be for, and this is just me babbling out loud, it's impossible, okay, say Mark Levine and me, to go over there for 2 weeks and broadcast from there, meet the people, see the people, photograph the people, come back,
yeah,
and just beat the American public over the head with, this is who you want to kill.
Yeah.
You want to kill people who get up in the morning and make breakfast for their children. They don't say death to America. Here, honey, here's your frosted Islamo flakes. Death to America. Death to America, mommy. No, they don't do that.
But they're just kids and mommies and grandpas and grandmas. And...
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's sickening. You know, and I just...
So you understand, I think, through the process, and, you know, I hate to use a phrase like that, but I think you're a little... there's a lot of frustration.
The frustration's there.
Because, I mean, and I addressed it a month or 2 months ago. You know, time is fluid for me now. When I said, you know, some of the stuff I hear, and I just say, do it, you bastards. I'm tired of waiting for this other shoe to drop.
Yeah. What I do when I get that frustrated is I pull up a game and I kill monsters.
I wish I could. I wish I could.
I have a computer game that lets me.
I used to have this really cool
monsters with blood flying everywhere.
Oh, I used to have this really cool game for a previous incarnation of the PC called Klingon Honor Guard, and I just blew everything away. And I was such a geek. But there were zero grav things where you'd shoot them, and the blood was just like in little bloop 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 bloop, and it was very satisfying.
RPGs.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah.
Diablo 2's.
Yeah. I can't remember if it was Quake or Doom where you got the chainsaw, and that was just a real party.
Oh, Quake is a first-person shooter.
Yeah, I know. I'm a first-person shooter kind of guy because I figure as an adult, I'm old enough that I know that it's not real.
Well, I'm old enough to know that those swords I use aren't real either.
Chop, chop, chop.
Yeah. Oh, God, there was one other thing I was going to mention. Oh, God. Yeah, I just went like... where did it go?
Well, I'll tell you what, I got another blinking light, so if it comes back, shoot me an email, and we'll get that thought out there, too.
Well, okay.
And best to Donald as he comes home.
Yeah, and you give Agnes a gift for me, and say hi to everybody.
I will. I certainly will, and say hi to Donald for us. And
for Donald to come waltzing, well, not waltzing, but... living through the door.
Tangoing? Tangoing? Do I hear tangoing? And yeah, I don't know if I get any time later this evening. The funny story of the night is the episode... You remember the old TV show, Love American Style?
Yeah.
Agnes and I lived an episode of that yesterday, and it was really quite fun.
I'm dying to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like salacious or kinky involved or anything. You know, it's just one of those...
Well, no, that whole thing was, none of it was salacious or kinky. It was just kinky.
Yeah, well, then we certainly had one. I hope I get around to it. Susan, take care, dear.
You too, and you have fun.
Will do. Bye-bye. Okay, let's see if our caller stayed on the line. I think this is a busy signal. Yepers. I told you, now, to sort of get back to the original theme of things, I told you that this was Moron Monday. And I've got a lineup of morons. And before we go to the audio, I want to share something with you that the thing hit last week, and it was just stunning. Stunning in its sickness, in its ability to shock the conscience, if you will. A while back, a gentleman by the name of David Brooks, and I do use the term gentleman ever so loosely. Well, he was the CEO of DHB Industries. DHB Industries, well, what do they do, Bob? Well, they're a body armor provider for U.S. soldiers in Iraq. The body armor they provided for U.S. soldiers in Iraq has been shown time and again to be defective, useless, worthless. I read that part of the story, and I was thinking about Arthur Miller's breakthrough play All My Sons, in which a corrupt war profiteer in the end of the play kills himself because he had been responsible by virtue of his war profiteering and his who gives a damn attitude towards shoddy products for the death of 25, I think it was 25, maybe 18 B-25 bomber pilots. War profiteering. Harry Truman, a Senator Harry Truman from Missouri, a member of the same party as the President of the United States, actually started a war profiteering investigation in the United States Senate, smack dab in the middle of World War II. If Fox News had existed then, there would have been fonts up from the Chiron saying, Harry Truman, why does he hate America? But David Brooks is a modern-day incarnation of the war profiteer at DHB Industries, hustling defective garbage body armor that directly and proximately led to the tears of mothers, wives, sons, daughters, aunts, uncles, cousins, best friends. And during the heady days of DHB Industries profiteering, David Brooks' little daughter turned 13 years old. And because it's a very special birthday, David Brooks threw a party. He's Jewish. He threw a $10 million mega bat mitzvah. Aerosmith was paid a $1 million fee to perform at this private party and flown in on the company jet. 50 Cent played the party. Don Henley of the Eagles played the party. He had the company, DHB, pick up the tab for that party 2 years ago, according to investigators. He also had cosmetic surgery put on the company tab, paid for by you and me, because, you know, this war don't come free. And it damn sure don't come easy for the parents who say, why did my son or daughter die? And they, well, you know, the body armor could have been better. It wasn't, you know. So, you know. Our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com is, I have said on a number of occasions, the sharpest, most erudite satirist on the web. And he wrote with regard to this horror, most of us will never earn $10 million in a lifetime. Evidently, neither did David Brooks. He was just indicted for fraud, tax evasion, and insider trading. Perhaps billing the company for his wife's facelift was not really a legitimate business expense. And would you be surprised to learn that his company's products are defective? The body armor that isn't. When tested, DHB's Swiss cheesecloth was found to have critical, life-threatening flaws. Policemen in New York and U.S. Marines in Iraq have discovered that their bulletproof vests couldn't stop a dust bunny. So David Brooks might be an accessory to murder. He may have killed so many Americans that he qualifies as an Al-Qaeda all-star. And of course, a man who'd squander $10 million on a bat mitzvah is capable of any crime. The very idea seems so anti-Semitic that Mel Gibson must be jealous. That $10 million orgy of excess is blasphemy, an affront to God and his first two commandments, thou shalt have no other God before me, and thou shalt not worship idols. Brooks was worshiping himself, a self-made golden calf, rather than the tenets and values of Judaism. If you believe in Judaism, you believe in justice. Unlike those gorgeous, sexually omnivorous idols of Olympus and Asgard, our staid, stiff God pioneered morality along with a constricting dietary code. Thou shalt not steal. And certainly not to subsidize a teenage bacchanalia. A poor Bedouin people, then a scattered and persecuted tribe through the ages, all we Jews truly possessed, Eugene writes, were our faith and values. At the whim of crusader or Cossack, our material acquisitions were gone, but our teachings endured. They defined us and gave us a strength that has defied history. Now we find ourselves in a land of tolerance and opportunity. The ghetto has given way to the suburb. We no longer are restricted by the majority's church or prey to the bigotry of a Tsar. In fact, we are free to make asses of ourselves. Philip Roth was never at a loss for satire. The bar mitzvah has long since become a parody of its original purpose, a genuine rite of passage. Today, the ceremony is just an excuse for an extravagance. Modern American Judaism seems largely defined by its sense of humor and a high cholesterol diet. But our heritage still imbues us with an empathy to the oppressed and an indignation with injustice. Although we did not copyright the golden rule, we apply it when we vote. But those values mean nothing to David Brooks. Nature should not merely abhor a vacuum. It should despise him. Eugene says, tomorrow I may come up with satirical ways to spend $10 million on a bat mitzvah. But today, I'm just too angry. You can read it for yourself over at FinnermanWorks.com. You can add your own comments there as well. FinnermanWorks.com, FinnermanWorks.com. Click on Your RDA of Irony. And I thought that so appropriate when I considered the words of Rabbi Asriel Fellner last week on Mark's program. So moving, so touching. And what a violation of everything it is to be human when a war profiteer, drowning in the blood of young American men and women, steals from the American people to bring Aerosmith, 50 Cent, and Don Henley to his daughter's 13th birthday party. It's another part of the book, Eugene, but we've got one too. Jesus wept and wept. Let's see if there's anybody on the phone. Hey, who have I got?
Wayne.
Hey, man, what's up?
Oh, same old, same old. You can't, the person waiting online can't hear you.
Oh, so no. Well, your button, I had your button screwed up.
Okay. Okay, I don't know. Who called earlier? Phil.
Yeah.
You got to admire the man's passion. You know, so here's other things you could do. You don't have to wait for presidential candidates to come to your town or county or state. You can start going to your local, you know, a lot of county commissions, city councils, certainly the Democratic Executive Committee, and I'm sure there's one that exists in most every county in this country. You can go before them. Yeah, you know, you don't have to interrupt them. You just get on the agenda and tell them that you expect them to start acting like Democrats, that it's your understanding that Democrats stand up for working people, and you want to see your Democratic Executive Committee, City Council, County Commission, or whomever the Democrats control to start acting like Democrats. You know, I've done that with these nurses. We've been to two counties, city councils and county commission meetings and Democratic Executive Committee meetings, and asked them to come out in statements to support the nurses. Now, none of them have yet, but I truly expect, well, I just got on the phone with the chairman of the Democratic Committee in Raleigh County, and he's going to call a special meeting. So, you know, I mean, there are other things, you know. You don't have to wait for them to come to you. They exist in every city and county, or most of them, that there are.
And, you know, you're a building trades guy. You can tell folks buildings are best built from the foundation up, right?
Well, that's exactly right.
And your foundation in this instance is a county commission, a city council, a mayoral meeting.
Executive committee.
Political executive committees, there are opportunities there, and I'll bet you you've got a better chance of being heard at one of those than you do at a candidate rally. Not criticizing anybody's tactics.
I'm
but
not talking about standing up and interrupting somebody with a sign.
No.
I'm talking about getting on the agenda, you know, which, you know, there are rules, you know.
But they have to let you speak.
Yes, they do. They are public meetings. They're public meetings.
Now, if you stand there and throw a bucket of paint or scream, you know.
And all of them, even if you don't get on the agenda. You know, like in Raleigh County, for instance, there are meetings on the first and third Tuesday. Or first and last Tuesday, I forget. But they all have, you know, schedules like that. If I want to get on the agenda and the meeting's Tuesday, well, I have to call by Friday. If something between then, I go to the meeting, and after they've done their business is a public comment period, and you just get up and present your case, you know. And, you know, I think it's good to confront presidential candidates also. I disagree with the bill how you say his name?
Maher.
Right. Bill Maher's on our side. I mean,
well, for the most part, yeah. I mean,
yeah, for the most part, I mean, you know, that's pretty good for the most part.
Yeah, well, the thing I object to with the Bill Maher situation is that the rest of the audience was held captive to those people. Do you see what I'm saying? The law-abiding audience, they had to listen to it. They came there to see Bill Maher's show. And instead they had to sit there and put up with a bunch of people carrying on like fools.
And, you know, if you let Bill Maher's go, you know, he slams them pretty good all by himself with absolutely no encouragement from the audience, you know. So, I'd say there are a lot of things, you know, it's time to start telling Democratic officials that you expect them to act like Democrats.
Yeah.
That, you know, and, you know, remind them if they don't, they'll be up for election here next time, whenever that may be. And you're going to work your butt off to replace them with somebody that is really a Democrat, who believes in supporting working people, who believes in diplomacy.
Who believes in talk first before bombing, for instance.
Exactly. I don't know, where did I read an article today? I don't know, Salon, Alternet, something or other, you know, talking about what rational people would do and what crazy people do. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
And, you know, it more or less went on to, you know, rational people look at what's been created in the last 6 years with these people and say, you know, well, it's time to do this, this, and that. Crazy people say, it's time to start another war.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we're tired of the old one. We want a fresh one.
Exactly. You know, our reputation isn't zero yet, you know, so let's start another war, and then everybody will hate America, and we'll have to fight wars forever, and, you know.
Well, like, Senator Byrd sits as the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, the single most powerful chairmanship in the Senate.
Yes.
And, you know, I got to wonder, does he know that there's $88 million tucked away in the emergency Iraq spending bill to retrofit B-2 bombers for deep-penetrating 30,000-pound bombs for Iran? Does he know this?
I would certainly hope he knows it. I mean, you know, he can't know everything, but he should have staff and, you know, people that say, you know, Senator, here's this.
Because, you know what, you don't need to retrofit those bombers for Iraq. And you don't need to retrofit them for Afghanistan. There's only one reason to do that.
I agree. But anyway, there are a lot of things people can do, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, and it doesn't have to be in the form of civil disobedience at a meeting. Get on the agenda. Tell them what you expect. Bring as many people with you as you can.
And that's the other thing about city council, county commission meetings. There usually aren't a lot of people.
No, they're not. They're, you know.
But there's a guy from the newspaper there desperate for something to write about.
Usually. And sometimes television. You know, depending on, you know, what the agenda is or what they're going to talk about or whatever. You know. So, you know, I showed up at a city planning meeting one time. There were four or five panel, or, you know, I don't know what the hell they call them, committee people. And I came in and sat down, and they all looked at me and said, what do you want? I said, isn't this a public meeting? Well, yes, it is. I said, I want to see what goes on at this meeting. I mean, you know. And, you know, if you want to get things done, have, you know, 20, 30, 50 people stand or show up and have a spokesman and, you know, play by their rules. They have rules. They're public meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And there's rules.
And as long as you play within them,
you could say just about anything you want. Just about anything you want. And you could challenge them. You know, I went before city council in Beckley the other day and told them the mayor refuses to make a statement about this nurse situation. Does anybody here want to overrule the mayor? Anybody want to make a motion? that you should make a statement. And, you know, they all stood there and looked at me like I was, you know, but that's how you start. And I'll tell you what, if you keep at it, you'll get something. You know, it's, well, there's a lot of ways of doing things. And I don't disagree, you know, with everything Phil said. Now, I want you to know that.
Sure.
You know, but, well, you know, the thing the other night on Bill Maher's or whatever is, well, I don't see where it accomplished anything.
Nor I.
It got on YouTube and, you know, so more people think they're nuts.
Yeah. Not, well,
you know,
I mean, that's...
I mean, I don't know.
Right. Don't know. And frankly, I think, look, I have a fairly clearly delineated list of priorities, Wayne. Building 7 ain't high on the list right now.
It fell down, didn't it, Bob?
Yeah.
That means it's gone.
I mean, the yeah, it's not there. And on the other hand, there is a war going on. On the other hand, our Constitution is...
planning on starting another one.
Yeah. Our Constitution is constantly under attack, and we have a little problem in Congress with people who don't of our party who don't seem to want to defend it. I got a real problem with that, and that's real high on my list.
I've signed things asking for Nancy Pelosi to just resign and take Harry with you. I don't know, what's his name? Feingold. Let's put Feingold in there.
Yeah, he'd make a nice majority leader.
I would go with that one. I don't know who we're going to put in as speaker.
I'd put in Dennis, but he's busy running for president, you know. But there are people. It ain't Steny.
Put in Dennis.
Yeah, it ain't Steny Hoyer.
No, it ain't.
But there are and frankly the people that you and I like and most of the people who listen to this program like are people that the Democratic leadership in the Congress do everything in their power to stymie. You know, do I think that John Conyers would behave differently if he was in the Speaker's chair? I got a pretty good idea he would.
I think he would too.
But right now he's...
I mean, you know, you got to remember, you know.
He's got a tennis ball in his mouth, and it's wrapped with duct tape, and Nancy Pelosi put it there.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's the same situation we have in West Virginia. You know, how many Republicans run as Democrats because they know that's how they get elected?
Yeah.
Well, we got a whole bunch of Democratic senators and Democratic Congress members that are really Republicans.
Well, we had a list of them last week, the ones that voted to censure Pete Stark.
Yes.
Five of them freshmen.
Yeah.
Rahm Emanuel's so-called blue dog Democrats.
How about all the ones that voted for the, you know, extra money for the war and are going to do so again? Yeah. How about all them people?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty to be angry about. There's plenty to work about. And frankly, I'm not opposed to sitting down and being removed in an act of civil disobedience and peaceful resistance. I'm not opposed to that in the least.
Me neither.
Let me go first. I support it wholeheartedly.
I do too. I do too.
On the other hand, you know, just I sensed in what Phil said, Wayne, a great deal of frustration. The idea that what we're doing isn't working and we have to somehow change tactics. I don't know that it's not working.
I don't know that it's not working either. I think the problem with it is that there are not enough people involved. You know, it's not the strategy, it's the numbers. And I think that's what we have to do. And, you know, that's why I say go to your Democratic Executive Committee.
Yeah, and barring that, if you're up to the task, if there's an open seat or a seat, or there is somebody who's not behaving like a Democrat, and you think you'd be better off, by God, run.
That's exactly right. Or back somebody that will. Go work as hard for somebody that will. I'm gonna tell you, I hope I live long enough. You know my problems with the mayor of Beckley.
Right. Yeah.
I looked up all his stuff today. He's 46 years old. When his next election comes up, he'll be 59 or 60, and I'll tell him I hope he planned good because he ain't going to be mayor no more, and, you know, he can't collect Social Security for two more years. But, you know, I'm sure he knows, well, I'm sure he's well off, believe me. You know, he's been mayor since, I don't know, Moses was a baby or something. So,
yeah.
It's, you know, but well, anyway, he's gone. One of our RNs made a sign that said the next mayor of Beckley, his name is Emmett Pugh the Third. And she made up a sign that said the next mayor of Beckley will be an RN, not a Pugh.
But that's the real source of taking power into your own hands.
Well, it is, and you know a lot of these nurses are learning that. I mean, you know, they haven't been on. I mean, you know, some of these nurses don't know what a strike is. They know, you know, they came to work there 18 years ago. They worked under a nice contract. They were happy with the deal, you know, until all the understaffing started happening and all that jazz. And now they're out there on the picket line, and they're not political savvy at all. They don't know. They don't even know, you know, councils and committees and stuff exist.
They're learning fast.
All to it, and, you know, like they're, oh, wow, you know, well, this is where you play. This is where you play. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, buddy, I'm going to get off here.
All right. Take it easy, Wayne. Thanks for your thoughts. And okay. You know, thanks for reminding people that they're, hey, it costs nothing to go to a county commission meeting. It's not like they sell tickets.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. All you got to do is call them up and ask them when the meeting is, where it's at, and they got to tell you. They got to tell you.
They sure do. They sure do. Thanks, Wayne.
If you got something specific to say, get on the agenda.
Yeah, and tell those guys at the ground level, you know, at the ground level, say, you know, I want to see you put pressure on the higher-ups.
Exactly right.
And pretty soon you're getting heard in up in there where the up, you know, up there where the oxygen's thin.
Pressure comes in numbers.
Yeah.
You know.
And thermometers rise from the bottom, and buildings are built from the foundation up.
There you go. It's when we went before the Democratic Executive Committee, well, the first thing they had to do was call the state chairman. You know who our state chairman is?
Yes.
The state chairman told him, who, you know, I mean, our state chairman's a Republican. He just happened to got a job as head of the Democratic Party, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know, tobacco lobbyist, that kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, right, you know. And chamber lobbyist for tort reform and stuff, you know. And anyway, the state chairman told my county chairman that was not in their, what is it? Purview?
Yeah.
Not in their purview. And the county chairman called me back, and I said, okay, I'll call the state chairman. And he said to me, well, actually, I can't tell them what to do. I said, very good. I'll pass that along. You know, so, you know, we're going to move forward. Now, I'm going to tell you now, I'm going to get something from them people, I guarantee you. So. Anyway, I'm going to go again.
All right. Take care, Wayne.
All right, brother. Bye.
Later. Bye. Being an activist doesn't involve screaming. It doesn't involve making an ass of oneself. Sometimes, you know, the biggest part of the toughest part of the game is showing up. And you know what? Nobody goes to county commission meetings. Nobody. Nobody goes to county commission meetings. And the little reporter from the local newspaper is dying for something to write about. Stand up, make your case, make it firmly, make it cogently, make it intelligently. You'll be hard to ignore. Come back twice, you're harder to ignore. They see you three times, they realize, you know, Maybe we ought to actually think about this stuff. Let's go to the phones again. Ah, you did it again. So, it's not as complicated as you may think. And it is dark out there, and I'm not going to give you that old hooey about it's always darkest just before the dawn. Sometimes it's darkest just before the air burst at 20,000 feet. And, you know, I know how hard you guys work, and I know that you do get out there, and you do, if you march, if you stand with a sign, whatever you do, you're making yourself heard. If you're wearing out your congressman every blessed day, if you're writing the letters to the editor, you're doing. And that is not inconsequential. Not in the least. But it is in some ways similar to some of the stuff that I go through sitting here behind the microphone, because this isn't like a theater. I can't sneak a peek out beyond the footlights and see all of y'all. Through the magic of computers, I know you're there, but I can't see you. This isn't Romper Room. I see some of you in the chat room. I see a lot of you in the chat room. The chat room's growing by leaps and bounds. If you haven't gone to the headonradionetwork.com chat room and signed in, well, you're missing out on an integral part of participating in the program. Feel free to. Activism? Well, sometimes you get activism forced on you. They're going to start mountaintop removing on the hills that I can see from my home soon, and on down the road across the line into Greenbrier County, West Virginia. They're going to be doing it all along Route 60, the old Midland Trail, and it's going to be coal filth and coal dust from coal trucks. And I guess it's stand and be counted time for me and mine here at home. We've talked about what's going on in other parts of the state, but it wasn't on top of us. Now it is. Sometimes you decide to be an activist. Sometimes being an activist is all the choice you have. So it'll be little tiny city council meetings for me. And it'll be county commission meetings. And I'll have to learn to read all the Department of Environmental Protection documentation, just like my friends have down in the Coal River Valley for so long. This is the heroism of the working day. This is the next hour, the last hour. The 2, 3, 4, 5 extra hours you put in a week. Whether it's the war or your very ability to breathe clean air and drink clean water. When it comes, you either stand up or you lay down. And I'm proud to be associated with a whole bunch of people in this network. Listeners, emailers, bloggers, moderators, chatters, callers, who don't have a damn dime's worth of lay down in them. And it inspires me to no end. Susan's phone calls, letters to her representatives, Phil's constant activism, his constant moral drive for justice, all of it, I swear to you, all of it is what makes doing this, it's what makes doing this worthwhile. It's the community. It's the coming together. It's the sharing of ideas. It's the shoulder cybernetically around another shoulder when it seems like we're not getting anything done. When it seems like nothing is happening fast enough. It's the knowledge that as long as we don't quit, we can move forward. Yeah, what I said a few nights ago is it seems like it's becoming more and more clear that it is my mantra, climb or die, climb or die, climb or die. There is no going back. It's one of the things that the right wing doesn't seem to understand. They want to go back to something. They want to go back to leave it to Beaver Land that never existed. I understand it. They apparently don't. The right wing doesn't. They yearn for something that never existed. They yearn for a time that they have washed in some sort of golden light. But in its real day was in large part a life lived in darkness. There's nothing charming about the 40s or the late 40s or the 50s or the early 60s. There's nothing charming there. So, you know, that's the choice. Be brave, go forward, climb. Climb or die. We'll be back after the news. You know the phone number. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. The Associated Press reporting that the U.S. State Department cut a deal with Blackwater USA guards for immunity from prosecution. That will delay and possibly undermine the criminal inquiry into last month's deadly attack on 17 Iraqi civilians. It remains unclear why investigators agreed to immunity or who authorized the deal. The U.S. Supreme Court agreeing to decide whether ExxonMobil should pay $2.5 billion in punitive damages to victims of the huge Exxon Valdez oil spill. Back in 1989, more than 1,200 miles of pristine Alaskan coastline were polluted by 11 million gallons of oil. The worst oil spill in U.S. history also killed hundreds of thousands of seabirds and marine animals. For the first time in Argentina, a woman elected president. She is the current president's wife, First Lady Cristina Fernandez, an attorney and senator. She won election by a landslide. More than 100,000 Turkish troops poised at the border to battle 3,000 Kurd militants hiding in Iraq. Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah accusing British officials of ignoring Saudi intelligence in 2005. The king says the information could have prevented the London bombings that killed 52, injuring more than 700. In Baghdad, 8 of 11 Sunni and Shiite sheikhs were released after they were abducted while on their way to the Diyala province. At least one of the sheikhs was found shot to death. A suicide bomb detonated outside a police training camp in Bakuba, killing at least 30 recruits and wounding more than 20. Meantime, Israel has slashed fuel supplies to Gaza in retaliation for Palestinian militant rocket attacks aimed at southern Israel. A spokesman for the United Nations says the concern now is for those living and working in the Gaza who could be adversely affected. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert today announcing he has prostate cancer. He says he'll have surgery and try to remain in office. Seven students from the University of North Carolina died in a beach house fire overnight. Six others survived. Fire officials say the flames may have ignited from an outside deck. Country Western star Porter Wagoner passed away at a Nashville hospital last night at the age of 80. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business News next.
Civility takes an effort. It requires that people remember that relationships need our attention. Whether we are talking about our most important personal relationships, how we get along with our colleagues, or the way we interact with strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out. Ralph Waldo Emerson suggested, "We must be as courteous to a man as we are to a picture, which we are willing to give the advantage of a good light." This is the essence of civility. When we are civil to strangers, when we defer at the intersection instead of racing out ahead, when we hold the door for someone we don't know, when we smile at someone who catches our eye, we declare our choice for a civilized society. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Archaeologists in Puerto Rico say they have found the largest and best-preserved Indian pre-Columbian site in the Caribbean. The discovery, a plaza thought to have been used for games and rituals, it's dated as early as 1500 A.D. The Auto Workers Union narrowly approving a four-year contract with Chrysler over the weekend. Ford Motors is the final major U.S. carmaker to enter negotiations with the UAW. British Telecom announcing a seven-year deal with Swiss pharmaceutical company Novartis, the contract valued at $500 million. The FCC could change rules that currently allow a single cable television company exclusive rights to service apartment complexes. Permitting increased competition is designed to lower consumer prices. Federal Reserve meets tomorrow, many analysts saying the board can be expected to lower interest rates for the second time in a row. Food and energy costs are increasing, the dollar falling, and the housing market remaining stagnant. A new record in oil prices today in the Asian markets this morning. The price of oil rose above $93 a barrel. Traders say they fear a Middle Eastern conflict, supply problems, and the weak U.S. dollar. Light sweet crude at $93.53. Gold at $792.60 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial up 63 points at 13,870. More on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
I'm all refreshed from my little five-minute break. And ready to rock on and head right back to the phones. And I believe a first-time or very nearly first-time caller, Chris, calling from Portland. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. This is Chris, and I'm close to Portland, and I got some questions about our debt in the nation.
Okay. I'm not an economics guy, but I'll try.
I'm not either, but, you know, everybody says you got to pay your debts, and if not, they're going to repossess what you financed.
Right.
And David Walker, the head of the GAO, was on C-SPAN on December 8, 2006, and you can go to cspan.com and put in David Walker and go to that program and watch it. And he talks about the question was given to him about the debt being $8 trillion. He says, well, that's the debt that they put on paper, but there's really unfunded debt liabilities that you have to deal with, and that's really like $50 trillion that went from $20 trillion when Bush took office to $50 trillion, which increased $30 trillion in these 6 years with Republican Congress. My question then is, because we borrowed all this money, we have to use collateral to do it. And what did we put up as collateral to finance this debt? That if it's going up $3 trillion a year, as David said, then basically we're going to bankruptcy. And what are we going to have to give up?
Wow.
Get away with, we have to pay the debt. And if we don't, I mean, they can always say, well, we don't have money because we just have to pay the debt. So what do we do?
What a whale of a question, and what a whale of a way to think about it. The first thing that comes to mind, since we're doing a little time traveling anyway, I'm reminded of a trip that George W. Bush made probably, yeah, it was during the election cycle, the last one, the 2004 election cycle. He came here to West Virginia, and this actually has some bearing on what you said, Chris, because he went to this place in Parkersburg, West Virginia, an otherwise innocuous little Ohio River town, that has therein the headquarters of the United States Bureau of the Public Debt. And he went there, and they showed him a file cabinet, and it was the file cabinet basically that held, you know, the debt that supports things like Social Security. And he made the comment at that point in time, well, it's just a bunch of useless IOUs, which just sort of made my eyeballs roll back in my head, because the question that you're asking is, you know, what is our collateral? The collateral of the United States is the full faith and credit of its money. And the collateral that we're extending in this big check-kiting scheme are the 30-year bellwether treasury bond.
Well, my my thinking then goes back to I got told that from the World Trade Organization or the World Bank or something like that, that because of our debt, Bill Clinton financed our debt through them and gave up our parks, our national parks, and the ownership of them. So basically they're gone for this debt. So what else was given up? I mean, here we get back to the specifics of, you know, what was it? And I don't know, scarier than, you could say it's scary as hell, but it's an e-ticket here on Earth anyway, so what a ride.
Yeah.
But without the Internet, we'd be ignorant and dumber than dirt. So, God, I'm so appreciative that you're on.
Well, I don't know that I'm much help on this, but, you know, that sort of makes me wonder about things, Chris, because you read a story here and there about, you know, oh, so-and-so got the contract for servicing the vending machines in Yellowstone. And a statement like what you just made makes me go, oh, really? Well, maybe that's part of the deal. But the privatization of all of so much of America's infrastructure has to do with this idea that the public government cannot accomplish anything. There was a statement made by George Bush last week in addressing the people who had lived through the hell of the Southern California fires, and he said, and we just want to let you know that the government is here to help you to the extent that the government can.
Well, that's kind of nice, but I don't see Blackwater holding people in with their guns and making them go back and die. I don't see, you know, the whole, you know, kicking out of any kind of help by Blackwater and, you know, making people die from kicking out all the food, the water, the resources, blocking any of the naval people coming, any of the people with boats coming in.
Right.
I mean, it was a total blockade by, you know, by the administration's forces. And that seemed to be Blackwater right at the beginning, right up front, and they weren't there. And so if they're not there, it's not the same.
But this idea that, yeah, to the extent that the government can, the whole thinking behind neoconservative government is to prove to people that the government is incompetent. And this is part and parcel of that. Well, you know, the government can't help you. The government can't help you because the government's no good at it. You got to go back to somebody like Grover Norquist, Citizens for Tax Justice, or whatever his little organization is.
Well, yeah.
When he said we want to make the government so small you can drown it in a bathtub.
Well, yeah, but that goes back to what you had said before, that you didn't say whether it was Building 7 or something else. And to me, it really goes back to the truth. It doesn't matter which one you want to start at. Start asking questions and getting the truth, and you'll get back to the boat. Either one will coincide, because you got the same liars doing what they're doing. saying the same lies. So as long as you start going back to wherever it is and follow it back, you'll get back to where you want to go.
Well, what I was saying where that was concerned, Chris, is that people are now, you can make the Reichstag fire argument, and frankly, I'm on board with that 100%. 9/11 was George Bush's Reichstag fire. And it's the comparison is extremely easy. The Reichstag fire was followed by the Enabling Act. 9/11 was followed by the Patriot Act. And the Patriot Act and the Enabling Act are very nearly the same thing. But at present, the present threats that we are dealing with are the assault on habeas corpus, the domestic warrantless spying on Americans, a war in Iraq that we are losing a little worse every day, a war in Iran that they want because they're bored with their war in Iraq. And my focus or my intent is that that's the stuff that has to be stopped first, because you're never going to get any investigations into the past, whether it be the Kennedy assassination, the assassination of Dr. King, the shooting of Robert Kennedy, or 9/11. You're not going to get to any of that until you write the ship of state.
Oh, that's true. And get the media so that they're back, not a pawn of the administration. I mean, the people are they're so tube oriented. If it's on the TV, they believe it. And
yet you can't do news on the television for the most part.
You mean infotainment?
Yeah. Geez, you know. Like I said, I stopped off Thursday night, I think it was. I was just stopping off to get a snack to take home after the thing we did with Scott Ritter. And there was a TV on, and frankly, I was watching it. It was Virginia Tech and Boston College. And it was the end of the game. I was watching. The TV next to that was MSNBC. Their lead story was more problems for Britney, followed by a segment on Anna Nicole Shocker. Okay? So, you know, that's what's being fed to us. And again, what I've tried to explain, and I'm not trying to talk down to anybody by no means, is a different way of looking at what comes, anything that is commercially broadcast, whether it be cable or over-the-air television or over-the-air radio, it is not about the content of the programming. It is about delivering you. You are the product. And you are being delivered to the advertiser. Everything that happens in between the commercials is nothing. It can be a bunch of weirdos trying to survive 6 weeks in a contrived contest on a South Pacific island. It can be the latest starlet's choice in toenail polish color. Or it can be a football game or a baseball game. Any of that, it's all irrelevant as long as they are delivering you to the advertiser. So that sort of means that, you know, it's like griping at a junkie for buying heroin.
Well, this is true, and that's where we get back to, you know, what can people do? Well, you know, as far as that and put out signs and do whatever I can. All I know is that whenever I go into places, I'll make a big stink about, you know, you walk into a grocery store, it's easy to say, you know, some atrocity that's been going on. I can't believe that our government do it. Who voted for George Bush? I mean, there may be 30, 40 people in the store. They'll all hear me, you know, in doing it, and then I can walk out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and smile and be happy as, you know, as I can be, because, hey, they heard me. And I think
starting those conversations, Chris, is so important. Because even if they look at you and disagree, they might go home and think about it a little bit. Or the next time some piece of propaganda comes on the television, they might think about what you said. And that's the one thing that has been destroyed. Like I said, it doesn't matter what happens between the commercials as long as you see the commercials. But as long as you're watching and going through it all, there's one thing and one thing precisely that you are not doing, and that is talking to your neighbors. That's why we talk about the horn being a front porch. You know, because the TV goes off, we might fool around, kid around, whatever, but more important than anything else that goes on here is the interplay, the dialogue that I have with you, that you might have with somebody that you meet via the chat room that you then start emailing with, who then goes, and because it's community building and it's networking in the 21st century. God, I hate that word, networking. But it really, it's facilitating a dialogue that simply is not happening now.
Right. Well, I mean, this dialogue, everything goes back to money. It things in this country, and it go back to my initial about the $50 trillion where it's at, and at $3 trillion a year, we can't ever pay it off. There's no way that anybody can look at, well, how can we have any money for anything? So if they're going to make any money for anything, then they're giving up some piece of property or something, or an ownership. So what's really going on, I don't know. And to say that we can make a budget when this is what's, you know, in front. As I said, it was on December 8th. You can go to C-SPAN, U.S. Comptroller General on Pentagon Financial System. It's wonderful. It's just the U.S. Comptroller General on December 8th, 2006. So watch that if you can. I love your show. I wish I could be calm and like you in telling people things, because I get more radical than you, and people shout, and I don't know how to keep calm and, you know, say things in a way that they will listen.
Calm is a daily struggle for me, Chris, believe me.
It is. Oh, God, I can't believe I get so upset at nobody looking at anything. I mean, the total blackout of all news, all pictures, all information, and people are totally, it's like I'm talking to another planet. You know, in most of these people, they don't believe anything's going on.
But history is replete with examples of people who have gone through similar things to what you're describing, Chris. And the ones who were successful, the only difference is the fact that versus the ones who failed, in the long run, is that the ones who succeeded never stopped.
Oh, you can't stop. I'd rather die. I got raised in Virginia on, you know, liberty or give me death, or, you know, I've not yet begun to fight and get out of my way. You know, who are you?
Yeah.
You know, and that really upsets a lot of people.
Well, this
so
is... and
I'm going to let you go.
Okay. Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Chime in anytime. You are so welcome here.
Thank you.
Take care.
Have a wonderful day.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's see. Let's see which ones are actually... Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. This is Alan.
Hey, Alan. How you doing, buddy?
Hanging in there. How about you?
Getting through Monday.
You sound good.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, y'all were talking about earlier. I heard today that $1.44 buys 1 euro. That doesn't sound too good, does it?
No, and it's going to keep devaluing. The dollar is, well, and I saw stuff in my email today. You know, recession is on the way. But you know, sooner or later, drunks have to sober up, and that's kind of where we are.
Yeah.
What Chris was just talking about, there are things that are going to happen based on what Bush has already done. There are things that are going to happen in 2012 that's going to make the blood drain out of our faces.
Oh, wow.
But he knew that when he did it, and when he rewarded his cronies and his pals and the Kenleys of the world, he knew that he wouldn't be around for us to scream at and spit on the ground over, because it was all designed to come due on somebody else's watch.
Yeah, they want to drown the government in the bathtub. Doing a good job at it.
Yeah, I'd say they've got both fists around its neck at this point. That's why that line about "to the extent the federal government can" got all over me, because that was a confession. That was a confession by George Bush that he had no intention of letting the federal government do what the federal government used to be good at.
I think you said that you've heard of Joseph Campbell, the guy about mythology.
Oh, The Power of Myth. Yeah, it's amazing. I love it.
Yeah. And he wrote this book called Hero with a Thousand Faces, and it talks about the cycle and the adventure cycle, and a person either gets thrust into the adventure or the person goes into the adventure voluntarily. And I was thinking of as our nation as a whole, Jimmy Carter tried to get us to go into the adventure voluntarily, but we wouldn't listen to him. In a lot of ways, he was kind of cheated. So now we're being thrust into it. That's alternative energies.
Yeah, we could.
If we listened to Jimmy Carter many years ago, we'd be in a lot better shape financially and environmentally.
And I think spiritually as well, Alan.
Oh, yeah, definitely that. I remember him saying in one of his speeches that how bad it is for people to be judged by what they own rather than what they do in life.
And that's what we've had between the end of Carter's presidency and the rise of Reagan, and it's the rise of consumerism. There's a term for, and it's become rank, and it's become conspicuous consumerism. Back in the days of the Northwest Indian tribes, there were things that, and I'm not really competent to talk about these things, but something called a potlatch. And they were these huge, huge feasts, festivals, whatever, that the chief of one tribe would throw and invite everybody else to, and then to show the, how rich he was at the end of it, he'd just burn it all up. We're living in one great big potlatch.
I heard on a radio program today, I forgot which one it was, that there's a bunch of garbage floating out in the ocean and stuff the size of Texas. A bunch of garbage floating together. That's just the way it's turned out.
You're right, Alan, and there's a terrible price to be paid down the road. Sad thing is...
Yeah, there's been times when I've, like, walked into a big department store,
mm-hmm.
and I just think to myself, how long is it going to be in this department store winds up in a landfill? Just we just live in too much junk. Nothing lasts. We just have to have too much junk, and I think people are getting sick of it, want to live in...
Well, I'm kind of nerdy that way. I think about this stuff, Alan. I mean, I can't imagine, and maybe it's just because I'm short-sighted and don't understand the miracle of this country. I don't understand how we can have tomatoes all over the United States in December. I just don't get it. And that's me being simple, but really, I don't.
Yeah, we used to have them in a jar.
Hey,
tomatoes.
Hey, you know what? When February rolls around and I open that last jar of home canned tomatoes, it's almost enough to get you to spring, because long about then you're thinking, yeah, I can't take any more of this, and those tomatoes will save you.
Makes me think of a song by Greg Brown, "Taste a Little Bit of the Summer." My grandma put them all in jars.
That's about the size of it.
Yeah. We just need to live a simpler life, I think, and just get away from all this garbage. I think that's what the world is coming to.
Well, I love that saying, and it makes sense to me. Live simpler that others may simply live.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too.
Alan, well, good to hear from you, my friend.
Okay. Have a good day.
Take care. Drive careful now. Bye. Got to meet Alan over the weekend. Good guy. He was passing through West Virginia in his rig, and... we got together for a bite of breakfast on Saturday morning. I love meeting you guys when the chance arises. Let's go to line one. I have a sneaking suspicion that this is our very good friend, the sharpest satirist on the Internet, Eugene Finnerman. Eugene, is that you?
I hope so.
Last you checked?
If I were to believe your superlatives, it must be me. My wife doesn't believe a word of it when I say it, but, you know, with your mellifluous voice, it has far more credibility.
Well, I hope you got her into the room to hear how good you sound.
I did. Well, no, she got to hear how good you sound. I mean, this is almost like a reverse version of Cyrano, isn't this?
No, I am merely the vehicle. The words are all yours. I sent you that David Brooks story because I knew it would probably raise your blood pressure a little bit.
God, I mean, it's enough to make God convert. I mean, talk about guilt by association. I mean, Yahweh might want to just defect to Hinduism and lose himself within that pantheon so no one could, you know, hunt him down.
Yeah, or just move over and adopt the whole kill the Buddha thing and shuffle on off to Nirvana and have done with it. But, you know, it's not like this is anything new, Eugene. What was it, a few years back? I forget which one of the great big CEO crooks it was. He threw a 50th birthday.
Probably.
Yeah, yeah. Threw the 50th birthday party for his wife on an island in the Mediterranean. Flew Jimmy Buffett into play for that one. I guess his tastes were a little bit different than Mr. Brooks. $15,000 shower curtains, $20,000 gold umbrella stands.
Statues urinating vodka.
Yes. I forgot to. Yes.
Do not want to forget that.
No, and you know what? I don't mind a cold shot of vodka once in a while, but not that way.
Yes, I agree. It's not sanitary, even if it actually was sculpted ice. It's just the idea.
No, I'm not down with it at all. But I'm glad to have a chance to talk to you. We haven't talked in it's probably 9 to 2 years now.
It hasn't been that long.
It was May of 2006, year and a half.
Okay. Were you hoping that my voice had changed?
No. Your voice is doing quite nicely, thank you. But you've certainly had a lot of time to add a whole bunch of content over there at Fenerman Works, and I'm not blowing smoke at you. I love it, and the folks that have managed to actually wander over and have a look have written along and said, you know, gee, thanks, and because your ability to take a little piece of history and relate it to A, the modern world, and B, something relevant therein is it's much needed in our current culture. The conversation I was just having with Alan and the consumer culture that we have made of ourselves, it's only by seeing the excesses of 2,000 years ago that we can get a sense that, you know, this movie has played before and we know how it ends.
Yes, but Caligula was said to be an excellent public speaker, so often, you know, we're the inferiors now, having our own, you know, retarded Caesar.
Well, he is that, and of course, I've said in the past that if the Bush family gets their way, they want president after president after president until maybe 200 or 300 years from now. We'll just refer to the president of the United States as the Bush, much as the way the name, you know, because Caesar was a little kind of a noble but backwater family at the time Julius came along.
That's true. They were minor aristocrats, and indeed they succeeded through nepotism. They had an uncle by marriage who was a liberal military tyrant named Marius, and that helped give Julius at least some advancement in the way of Gaius Julius, the way of a career. I mean, in I, Claudius, that wonderful British series, probably available in libraries, Augustus has a equivalent of a North Country accent. He doesn't have a proper Oxbridge, you know, Oxford, Cambridge, you know, Jeremy Irons type of voice. He sounds like a Yorkshire alderman. Just to let you know that the Caesars were still relatively nouveau.
Yeah, they claimed relationships to going back to Venus, I think it was, but they'd only held the consulship once in 600 years or something like that.
Well, Julius really was a self-made man.
Well,
he was. Unlike our own, you know, command dude. And plus, Julius, he's gotten into Yale on his own, you know, credentials.
True, but the family at large bears some resemblance, I think, just insofar as they had ridden along, and the Bushes are like this, you know, at least since the beginning of the 20th century, the Bush family's never made an honest nickel in its life. It's all been a matter of public procurement and sucking at the public teat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that whole idea of the back, because they look for respectability everywhere they can.
Now they don't care anymore.
Well, they got thrown out of Ohio. That's how they wound up in Connecticut.
I thought it was Missouri, but all right.
Prescott's parents lived in Ohio, and it was when Prescott wrote a... and, I mean, this is all documented. This isn't just some crazy liberal out there maundering away. Prescott was drafted, and oddly enough, actually went to the war in the First World War, and wrote a letter home to his mom telling how he had, in one fell swoop, saved Marshal Foch, I think it was Marshal Foch and General Pershing at the same time, which his mother proudly passed along to the, you know, the Columbus, Ohio Daily Beacon and Paragon of Virtue or whatever it was, and it was published. And it turned out to be one great big howling lie.
Well, it was only meant for his mother. He had no idea the woman would, promote it.
Well, you know, those Bush mothers.
He's acting like a Jewish mother, which, believe me, none of them were.
But so
my son, the Savior. Say, I've heard that before.
And he thought his mother was a virgin. Yeah, I know the joke. They wind up in Connecticut. They flee Connecticut. They wind up in Texas, and all along the way, they try to reinvent themselves. So I don't think there's that much of a reach between that family and this family, and frankly, the urges of this family to become the modern equivalent of Caesar is.
Well, there's no reason the Supreme Court, by a 5-4 decision, can't rule that the first Bush term just was for funsie. Or they could just say the Cornwallis' surrender at Yorktown was under duress and therefore null and void, so we are specifically entitled to be ruled by a hereditary caste of Episcopalian upper-class twits.
That's terrifying in its own. And I don't think Britain would have us back at this point.
Well, no, but frankly, I think we'd be better with even demented Stuarts as the next generation of royals is going to be.
Well, my family was noted for following demented Stuarts, so at least maybe I'll get an invite to the party.
Well, the Stuarts were an attractive and stupid family. They imagine royalty cast by Aaron Spelling. And you can see where the late Princess Di and her boys are Stuarts. You know, after 300 years of, homely Hanoverians, we're getting good looks again in the royal family.
But judgment seems to go out the window.
They are Stuarts.
Yeah, showing up at parties in a little Nazi kit, But
and someone once asked me why Charles II was an exception to the rule, that he was actually bright. Had wit and a survivor's instinct, and I suddenly remembered he had a clever and wily French grandfather, Henry the Fourth. So, but unfortunately, he didn't pass on. Charles II was just that fluke of a bright bourbon, which in itself is an oxymoron. But the rest of the Stuarts remained, tall, attractive, and
painfully so. Yeah. Yep. Lessons hard learned at places, little dives like Culloden, sure.
Well,
Well, let me bring you back. Yep. Let me bring you back to David Brooks for just a minute. We had a program on just last week, Eugene. Of course, the guy who precedes me, Mark Levine. Is
I heard part of it, yeah.
Yeah, he's Jewish, and he had the rabbi on who was his boyhood rabbi, and it was just beautiful to hear. And I'm one, you can't paint with a broad brush in this instance, but if you're devout enough to throw a bat mitzvah for your 13-year-old daughter, theoretically somewhere along the way you've heard, a Mishnah something
Mark,
rubbed off.
No longer a question of piety. They're a question of ostentation. I mean, it is a question of social status. If you're middle class or ghastly rich, anything above, subsistence, you're expected to have a lavish bar mitzvah. It really, it's embarrassing. As I said, it has absolutely nothing to do with the original purpose, the legitimate rite of passage. Remember, when the bar mitzvah was first conceived, you were a man at 13. Frankly, your one-third of your life was already spent. You were unlikely to live past 40 or 50. And it was you already had the maturing hormones. Manifesting themselves, you were, for all practical purposes, a man.
Yeah, today's...
And we're only talking about... This wasn't just antiquity. We're still talking about the 19th century. I mean, has it ever occurred to you how old Tevye the dairyman probably was?
Well, we think of him...
40.
Yeah, but we think of him, he's always ancient,
Of course, because we always cast, actors in their 60s or,
Zero Mostel.
That time, and... but in fact, Tevye probably was at most in his early 40s. At the most. He could have been in his 30s. Remember, he was married probably by the time he was 15. His oldest daughter would have been the product of it when he was 17, you know, and she's married, you know, when she's probably 17.
Well, Eugene, let me ask you this. I mean, this...
This was the historical basis of the bar mitzvah.
Sure. But, you know, turning to the Brooks bat mitzvah,
yeah.
When the invites go out, mm-hmm. I mean, pardon me if I'm wrong, but isn't there a rabbi involved somewhere along in the process?
Oh, Lord. A rabbi's involved in the ceremony, literally in the reading of the Torah, the teaching of the Hebrew. I mean,
unless they get voice actors
to do it for them.
But at some point, don't you haul Mr. Brooks aside and say, you know, what are you doing here?
No. No, technically the rabbi is only, well, first off, it depends. If it's in the synagogue itself, it would have been a relative, you know, the actual reading of the Torah portion of Gabe would be, you know, they didn't buy the synagogue for the service or build one, although for $10 million they could have.
Yeah.
They simply, you know.
For twice that, Mel Gibson built a church in Malibu.
Oh, God.
I know. But where I'm going with this, Eugene.
Yes.
Is the notion, you know, you say it's ostentation.
Oh, it's actually,
and I agree with you.
A social director. Many bar mitzvahs these days depend more on the social director who will pick out the theme, or you know, coordinate the choreography, the DJ, whatever acts they want to have, the entertainment.
So there's no check, and I'm not simply confining myself to Jewish celebratory practices, but across the vast spectrum of our culture, there's no check on anything that, for instance, the church would recognize as an ostentatious display of one or all of the seven deadly sins. There's no rabbi to check David Brooks. There's absolutely nothing to. I mean, you mentioned I Claudius earlier.
Mm-hmm.
This is that. I mean, this is bringing a horse into the Senate. This is the Northwestern potlatch. I mean, and the thing is, all these cultures where those kind of things happen, these things start happening as a presage to a denouement that's generally really awful. I mean, this is eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we die, isn't it?
It might as well be. I remember Rome lasted another 4 centuries after I, Claudius, although the last century and a half was pretty, you know, perilous. But by that time they were Christians, so they were saved. You know, remember, Rome collapsed when they were all good Christians. It had nothing to do with the pagans. This is a gilded age. Except now the robber barons have nothing to show for their excesses. At least before, they were looting the public, they were also building useful railroads.
Or the Biltmore Estate, or a series of libraries across the country
well,
and hanging there.
Carnegie, absolutely.
But really, there's nothing that comes of this. And maybe that's because, you know, their wealth is phony in the first place, Eugene.
In many cases, that's my point exactly. Yes, they're
not
creating anything.
It's not Jack Benny leaping over the crocodiles to get down to his vault anymore. This is some guy who turns on his computer and goes, "Well, the computer says I'm even richer today."
Mm-hmm.
What happens when the computer won't come on?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is he back to rice and beans? I see, you know, these, of course, you know, the guy's been indicted. The question remains, though, you know, had he not done the facelift and the bat mitzvah, would he still be cruising along? Did he transgress some sort of line in the sand that you and I don't know about, that our financial superiors have, where, you know, when you just push it a little too hard, then, you know, we're going to call you on it?
He may have cheated the wrong people in his stock frauds. You know, when he was, you know, misrepresenting his, you know, the company's assets. He may have cheated the wrong people. because it's hard to believe this administration would, you know, prosecute Gilda Ross, you know, well-known child murderer, you know, for anything. After all, he would have been an early practitioner of Leave No Child Behind. But so I can't believe that this administration would really, you know, the Bush regime would really be appalled by mere embezzling. He had to do it badly, gracelessly.
Maybe it was the Don Henley part.
Is Liv Tyler a Democrat? Because this is their way of getting back at them.
You know, it almost, that would make sense. I mean, you know, your dad's Steven Tyler, you know.
I mean, that might do it. And by the way, I was amazed that they picked such, you know, generic.
Aerosmith, 50 Cent, and Don Henley. Mr. Brooks.
Well, 50 Cent is contemporary, I mean, but I don't think he would. And you'd be surprised how many Jewish suburban, you know, Jewish teenagers confuse their ghetto with the current one. But, by and large, Aerosmith and Don Henley were amazing. I guess that was for the parents. But, you know, I mean, if you're going to really get ostentatious, they could have hired the Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
Oh, God.
I mean, having them at a bar mitzvah would really be impressive.
Well, it would, but, you know, I don't think even David Brooks didn't have enough room to park the bicycles.
For $10 million, he could have accommodated, you know, gotten the tabernacle, could have rented the tabernacle for all we know. But,
so Aerosmith is a million. I don't know.
Older than me, so yes.
they look like a million, green and wrinkled. But Aerosmith's a million bucks. Figure it's another million to get Don Henley and 50 Cent through the door, maybe a million and a half. So there's two and a half. Where'd the other $7.5 million go?
Well, it depends. Was this on the West Coast or the East Coast? I'm not sure.
I think it's East Coast. Something tells me
on the West Coast, they could have had complimentary plastic surgery for the guests. That would, you know, nose jobs for all the little teenage friends. They would have gotten them anyway. Here they can get them in one swoop as part of during the luncheon.
And as everybody gets an iPhone in the swag.
You mustn't forget the swag gifts would have been substantial. Probably even Ivy League, you know, scholarships, especially if it were since this was on the East Coast.
If in fact I'm correct.
Life size statues and caviar of the, you know, Brooks family. That would, you know, be worth something.
Yeah, no chopped liver anymore.
Definitely not.
Of course, I'm plebeian. I like the taste of chopped liver, so especially over the caviar. But, yeah, who am I?
Personally, I do, too, but, you know.
But the schmaltz is not good for you.
I mean, you know, where does the, you know, where would the money go? I mean, I would have, if I had $10 million to spend on a bar mitzvah, I'd ask myself, what would Louis XIV do? Well, first, of course, I would rent Versailles for the ceremony.
Sure.
And, you know, Louis XIV used to commission ballets and comedies, you know, for his fêtes. And I suppose they could have done this thing. They could have, they'd want a Jewish writer, so, you know, they could have hired Tom Stoppard to do, you know, a play.
I mean, we're playing, of course, Eugene, but there's also truth in all of this because it takes some work to spend. Now, okay, back up.
It takes conscientious depravity.
Yeah, because now you and me, we sit down. I got a feeling you and I can figure out a way to run through $10 million in a day. It'll take some work. But this is a 13-year-old's party. Invite the whole school, and you're not at $1 million.
No.
Feed them hummingbirds' tongues and fillet of beef that's, you know, dipped in pure saffron, the most expensive food substance on earth. You're still not at $10 million by a long shot.
It's the entertainment. I mean, if you did spend several million dollars, that's it. But even then, we still would figure out how do you spend the other $6 or $7 million or $8 million.
And the beauty of it is, and I don't know if we've brought this out is that, or made this clear, he hung this all on the company.
Mm-hmm.
And this company was actively engaged. I mean,
there were a few defense contractors among the guests.
Oh, I'm sure.
Even I would have deducted that.
But by the same token, this is a company who is scrimping on materials and cannot make a bulletproof vest that's actually bulletproof.
I know. It's that to me is the real crime. I mean, the bad taste is ridiculous, but the criminality, I mean, the embezzlement is something. Is, well, that's how you demonstrate that you have an MBA. But when you actually cheat, literally war profiteering, you know, giving our troops inferior products. I mean, that to me is far more abetting the terrorism than daring to criticize Dick Cheney.
Well, see, I read this stuff, Eugene, and my benchmark for everything involving the Iraq War is to go back and find a particular segment in Joseph Heller's Catch-22. Because I'm convinced that Donald Rumsfeld and all the other neocons, somewhere along the way, because they're humorless SOBs in the first place,
yes,
read Catch-22 and thought it was a serious book about warfare. And I get this vision of some poor soldier in Iraq reaching inside his vest for the ceramic plate that's supposed to go there and stop bullets, and finding a thing that says what's good for DBS Enterprises is good for the country and everybody has a share. Because that's what he did. The ten million dollars. That's, you know, you said conscientious depravity. That's the conscientious depravity. At the whole, you know, when he's flying in Aerosmith, when he's calling the booking agent for 50 Cent, when he's, you know, when he's getting the guy with the chainsaw and the big block of ice to do Cupid or what the hell ever, all of that rides on the back. All of that is watered with the tears of a mother whose baby, who emerged from her womb and whom she nurtured through a life, is coming home in a box. You know, in the movie version of The Untouchables, there's this scene where Kevin Costner very seriously explains that to a fellow that folks in ancient Rome accused of bribery were put in a bag with a live wolf and thrown in the Tiber.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm not a death penalty guy, but for Mr. Brooks and for the families to whom he has brought eternal grief, I'll make an exception.
Well, let's just put it this way. Let them have the bar mitzvah in Baghdad, and they can wear their bullet vests to see how effective they really are.
Yeah, and that and the guy carrying the Torah is going to go over real good outside the green zone. Oh, mercy. Eugene, thank you so much. We're up against the end of it, but I'm really glad you called in because I've been stewing on this story for a couple of days, and I really desperately wanted some perspective. And by golly, you've given me the phrase that conscientious depravity.
All right.
That's out of the brain of somebody who takes the language in deadly earnest.
Well, thank you for inspiring me, not with the depravity, but giving me a chance to come up with something pointed.
Well, anytime the spirit moves you, well, probably wrong faith or whatever, but anytime something gets all over you, you know the phone number now, so, you know, don't be a stranger.
Oh, I thank you very much.
And my best to your lovely wife, and tell her she far underappreciates your many, many talents.
Except when I'm ridiculing her family.
Well, okay.
But that's a public service, so don't have to mention that.
Okay.
Eugene,
take care. Bye now.
You too. Bye.
Eugene Finnerman, he of FinnermanWorks.com, your RDA of irony. If you have not signed up for your RDA of irony on a daily basis, I don't know why not. We're not trying to make anybody rich here, and it doesn't cost to sign up for it, but you'll learn things you didn't know. And that's the really fun stuff to learn in the first place. That's it for tonight. Thank you, everybody. In the chat room, the moderators, our bloggers, the news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox, our chief engineer in Sydney, Australia. Our IT professional, Peter Godbold of Strictly Confidential, who is live on his way in a matter of mere minutes.
This is the Quality News Network. The U.S. Embassy in Azerbaijan promptly closed its doors today after authorities uncovered a radical Islamic terror plot to bring harm to, quote, individuals in and around the embassy, end quote. The British shut down their embassy nearby as a precaution in Azerbaijan as well. In northern Iraq, Turkish ground troops have encircled an enclave of 100 suspected Kurdish separatists, and they're preparing to attack. Helicopters for the seventh day pounded Kurdish positions Sunday, killing at least 20. Despite criticism from King Abdullah that England is not doing enough to fight terrorism, UK Foreign Minister Kim Howells is calling for Britain and Saudi Arabia to work more closely together to fight international terrorism. The King's visit to London is the first from a Saudi monarch in 20 years. The U.S.-led coalition has transferred the provincial security responsibilities in the Karbala province over to the Iraqis, marking the eighth province to be transferred over. The Karbala transfer is significant because it allows non-Iraqi Shia Muslim worship in the city of Karbala, a once-forbidden practice under Saddam Hussein. In Baghdad, at least 10 prominent Sunni and Shiite sheikhs meeting to discuss the defeat of al-Qaeda and other extremists were kidnapped on their way home to the Diyala province. Also, in the Diyala province, a bicycle-riding suicide bomber killed at least 31 recruits at a police training center. French President